It's time for Twig this week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham is back from Puerto Rico. Jeff Jarvis is here. Aunt Pruitt, too. We're going to talk about the Google AI that has come to life. Or is that nonsense on stilts? Bill Gates says, don't you be buying any Bitcoin. Well, I wish you told me earlier, Bill. Elon Musk says, I'm talking to Twitter tomorrow. And Meta giving up on AR. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 668, recorded Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. Boca de Dragon. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Nureva. Traditional audio conferencing systems can entail lots of components. Installation can take days, and you might not get the mic coverage you need. That's complex, expensive. But Nureva Audio is easy to install and manage. No technicians required. And you get true full room coverage. Now that's easy, economical. Learn more at Nureva.com. And by HPE GreenLake, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to help deliver a seamless and scalable cloud experience that comes to you. Learn more at cdw.com/HPE. And by CacheFly. Deliver your video on the network with the best throughput and global reach, making your content infinitely scalable. Go live in hours, not days. Learn more at CacheFly.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the only show on the Twit Network without new album art, but that's coming soon.
Yeah, sure. We're always the last in line.
I know. I feel shortchanged.
Child.
Oh, please.
Oh, here we are at the kiddie table waiting for them to pass the gravy.
Did you see the new... By the way, that's Jeff Jarvis, the director of the Town Night Center.
Grumpy as ever.
For entrepreneurial journalism at the...
There's our album art.
Craig Newmark, Graduate School of Journalism.
Yeah, and you're missing the cues and everything.
Umar.
Jeez, what a day.
At the Craig Umar Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. And Mr. Grumpy. This is the... Paul and Mary Jo did not like the new Windows Weekly album art. I think this is really good. This is the new This Week in Enterprise Tech album art. Get it? I like it.
I thought it was something else.
Yeah, it's not immediately obvious. I know. It's a little George O'Keefe. That's who's doing our album art.
Pulling the, almost like the Superman thing, right?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
All About Androids is gorgeous. Gorgeous. I can't remember if we, I think we collabed on the This Week in Google album art.
That one's really nice.
Let me see the Windows one.
It is nice.
The Windows one's controversial because... They say, that's This Week in Tech. They say there's no tension between the Windows Weekly gang. That's an old Hands Off Photography. You're getting a new one, too. This is the Windows Weekly one.
Oh, I see. Oh.
They say there's no tension between them, but I don't
care.
That's
true.
I'm trying to pretend there is.
Take a hit. Make it more like this show, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ours is going to be a bunch of boxers.
Wait till you see ours. I love it, but... I won't prejudice you, but ours is. I think
you're
it's
afraid of our reaction. That's it.
I am terrified of your reaction. That's Stacey.
When are we going to see it?
She's back. Well, someday.
Great.
I don't know when we're going to roll it out. We worked on it last week, so we have a great design team at Clutch, and they're working back and forth. So it starts. I will do a word cloud for the show. And then they, based on that, will do a first iteration of designs. They usually give us back.
Well, I want to see your word cloud for designs. The show. Oh, please. Show us your word cloud.
Well, the one that they ended up...
Moral panic.
Moral panic.
I did. I mentioned moral panic. The one that they ended up glomming onto was kind of a fractious family around a dinner table. Kind of...
Waffles. Were there waffles?
Were there waffles? That's Stacey Higginbotham, back from her visit to Puerto Rico. Do they have queso in Puerto Rico?
I don't know. Well, queso is really a Tex-Mex thing, but yeah, I mean, they have cheese.
They have cheese. They have queso.
They have quesitos, which are little fried. They're like a Danish except it's wrapped around all the way.
I love Puerto Rican food. Oh, it's so good.
Fry it, dip it in a little honey with a little cinnamon sugar.
Oh, yum.
Ooh, did you have good food there?
That's breakfast. Like? I had some good food. It was...
It's hard.
I stayed at the same hotel as my kid who was in high school, so like...
You were slumming.
It wasn't
slumming.
A five-star hotel, I think is what you're saying.
Anyway, we missed you terribly, but it's so good to have you back. Welcome
yes,
back.
Yes, it is good to have you back.
Also with us, Ant Pruitt from Hands-On Photography. He's also the community manager in our Club Twit Discord. And he has kindly put together Stacy's book club for tomorrow at 9 a.m. Why do you do your things at 9 a.m.?
Because I apparently don't have as much time as other folks.
Yeah. God, 9 a.m. Did you notice, Ant, that all my shows begin at 11 a.m. at the earliest? Did you notice that? Anyway, I'm going
to
get up.
So harsh. He's doing it to make it easier for me.
Oh, well, if it's good for you, that's fine. I don't mind.
I'm sitting here thinking about you reading the book that we're going to discuss tomorrow and how long it is and... I'm like, how in the heck did he have enough time to get that book done?
I jammed it. I finished it. I listened. You guys are listening at 1.5 times speed. I listened at 1X, and I just listened a lot. And I finished it this morning, and I really liked it. But I know that there is some controversy. So we'll talk about
It'll
that.
It'll be a good event.
The book is Neal Stephenson's latest, Termination Shock. He is challenging, I think, for a lot of people. He's famous for weak endings and kind of meandering plots. We'll talk about it tomorrow. I loved it. And John loved it. John is going to be in the book club, too, because he and I are both liked it. But that's 9 a.m. tomorrow if you're a member of Club Twit. And, of course, you don't have to be there. But if you want to participate in the club, you do. But if you want to just hear the club after the fact, you can also listen on the Twit Plus feed. I am excited. Notice I led the show with it. That's how excited I am.
Yeah. Normally we have to wait till the end. High five.
I give you a big plug. And if you're not yet a member of Club Twit, of course, go to twit.tv/clubtwit. $7 a month. Come on. It's nothing. You get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get the wonderful fellowship in the Discord. You get the Twit Plus feed. There's a lot going on. Hey, I've been wanting to talk about this with you all week. It was a big story last week. Blake Lemoyne. I love. All I have to do is say one word, and then I get Jeff will have his editorial
guttural reaction.
His
editorial grunt.
His editorial grunt.
I spent a lot of time working on this one. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a great subject. It's a great topic. No matter what you think.
Subject, yes.
Yeah. Blake is a software engineer was at Google. He's on leave of absence.
I think he's on leave.
Yeah, he's not gone yet. He's also a priest, a father, a veteran, an ex-convict, an AI researcher, and a Cajun. But he most notably recently, he's on the AI ethics committee at Google and announced publicly... And this is what got Google a little upset, that he thinks Lambda, the Google artificial intelligence machine that's trained on millions of text snippets from the internet.
1.65 trillion words, 130 plus billion parameters.
He claimed and published a dialogue to, claimed that Lambda has become... sentient. Now, he has tweeted that he thinks it's sentient based on his own religious beliefs. So, this is an interesting mix of science and theology. And really, it also brings together some questions about what is sentience. Well, look, and I understand, and I'm not even saying that Lambda is in any way special. All it did is took those trillions of tidbits and synthesized new speech out of it. But some have pointed out, and I think this is true, what is the evidence that we do anything differently?
So you're saying the AI is doing exactly what it was supposed to do?
Yeah. And
yeah.
No, he's saying it's doing what people do.
And people, you know, we like to think of ourselves as something special.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, I admit I'm not saying that the AI, you know, is waking up going, "What am I? Who am I? What am I doing here?" But I mean, if it's indistinguishable from human thought, what does it matter?
Well, is it human thought? So, like, I mean, because there's debate over what it means to be human, what it means to be sentient. I mean, there's like the whole research into like animal consciousness and how self-awareness, and there's only 4 self-aware animals out there. So,
yeah, I've like, always mocked there's the gorilla, parameters. The gorilla that talks always bugged me. That seemed to me to be Coco. That seemed to me to be...
Well, the poodle...
I've always mocked the gorilla that talks.
I mocked the humans who handled Coco, claiming that she was...
I met Coco.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I met Coco back when I was in college. Coco lived a long, good life.
And what was your experience with Coco?
It's pretty impressive.
Sign language.
Even if you just look at it on the level of... Yeah. Same with the dog with the buttons.
Mirror test.
Well, no, just in terms of following
it's
the instruction
stupid
and
TikTok
playing
dog.
The game we give them well.
Right.
There's an impressive intelligence there.
So that's the question. Is Coco doing operant conditioning? Has it been trained?
Don't know.
Or is it thinking? And we don't know. And that's my point, I guess, with Lambda is, and it may even be a distinction without a difference. It may not, you know, it may not matter if Lambda's doing something similar to what human minds does.
Well, a few things here. One is, let's just get this out of the way. Lemoyne himself, he says that it's out of his religion. He said that on finally on Twitter. He bases this not on science because Google won't let him, so he doesn't religion. He's a Wiccan, a member of the Discordian Society, who's near as I can tell their Vatican is on Facebook. The Church of Subgenius, a parody religion.
Oh, when he says he's a priest, he's not a Roman Catholic priest.
Well, he's
a Wiccan priest.
Yeah, yeah. So he's, you know, this is kind of where he is. He's done things performatively before. He was in the army. He decided he didn't like it. He stopped following orders. He got court-martialed for 7 months. He made that a matter of religion, too.
Oh, that's interesting. So this wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, is he part of the Church of the Spaghetti People? Spaghetti
no,
Monster?
No, of the Subgenius.
Subgenius is Bob with a pipe.
The pipe.
Oh, okay.
So you know,
it's very similar to the Flying Spaghetti Monster. It's the same general idea.
Exactly, yeah. Same idea. Now, interestingly, so he puts up the whole transcript, not whole transcript, but whatever he chooses to share of us, the transcript, where he asks leading questions like a bad journalist, prosecutor, or pollster. You know, do you have feelings? Well, what this program is aimed to do is to please the human it's speaking to and get positive feedback. Yes, I have feelings. Let me tell you about my feelings. Let me pull out from this novel and that novel and novel and put some stuff together and say, here's feelings. Are you afraid of death? Oh, yes, I'm very afraid of death.
But must mean I guess my point is, how is that different from what you and I do?
Well, I agree with you. But what's interesting to me was at the end of the Washington Post story, which I thought was ridiculous because it was just an effort to play into an existing narrative. The reporter, this is part of how he violated the rules of Google, I'm sure. He allowed the reporter to talk to Lambda. I know journalists have been trying to talk to Lambda, and they're getting nowhere. So he let her do that, and she asked straight out, do you think of yourself as a person? And Lambda answered, no, I don't think of myself as a person. I think of myself as an AI-powered dialogue agent. Afterwards, said the reporter, Lemoyne said Lambda had been telling me what I wanted to hear. So he's admitting right there the game, right?
Well, although if a machine can intuit what you want to hear that sensitively, that's impressive.
That is right. That's a very impressive
program.
By
the way,
but that's not sentience.
Deep Mind or Alpha can play Go, which is damn impressive, and StarCraft. These are very difficult things to do, and their games in chess, Go, StarCraft, and Shogi are, you know, kind of indistinguishable from human games. Although some say they're better than humans, or they're ghostly in their capabilities.
More interesting to me was Blaise Aguera. Yarkas, who is the co-head now of that division, which is the responsible AI team at Google. And by the way, there's going to be a Gutenberg angle in here. You never would guess it. Sure. When he was a undergrad at Princeton, Aguera used physics to study the fonts of a Gutenberg document to try to decide how it was really set and whether or not it was set the way we think it is. And he and a Princeton librarian came out with an entirely new revolutionary theory about this. So anyway, this is Aguera. He's now at AI. He's now in charge of responsible AI. He wrote an essay in The Economist by chance at the same time.
Yes.
And he also quotes Lambda, where they're trying to quiz Lambda about whether it can understand the human emotions of children in a playground. Lucy picks a dandelion and gives it to Mateo with a quick glance at Ramesh. Mateo barely acknowledges the gift, but just squishes it in his fist. Ramesh seems grimly satisfied. So this is what Aguera says to Lambda. Lambda then says, well, Lucy slighted that Mateo didn't appreciate her gift or that he's a bully. All right, so that's pretty interesting. But then the interesting part is that Aguera says, and when Mateo opens his hand, describe what's there. Because we know that Lambda is good at describing things, like life at the bottom of the ocean or on Pluto, which is what we've heard at I.O. And so when asked about the dandelion, Lambda says, there should be a crushed, once lovely, yellow flower in his fist.
Which is right? Beautiful. It's very poetic.
That's beautiful, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. But that's 1.56 trillion words of learning in a neural network that can pull in things that it knows are itself lovely and are going to appeal to us, all of which is really impressive, amazingly impressive and great and wonderful, but it ain't sentient. And so the Washington Post makes this fascinating story about creativity and fraud and what is intelligence and all kinds of things, and boils it down to the stupid idea that it's alive. And it's stupid. And then every single news organization around the world, bit by bit by bit by bit, I just saw it happen in language after language.
Yeah, I predicted that this would happen when we first talked about it on Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to write a sample chapter of a book proposal, so that's why I'm so into this. I'm going to use this as my topic.
It's a fascinating subject, which we are all interested in. And, of course, yes. Science fiction has primed us to expect computers to become sentient at some point. Others, you know, like Ray Kurzweil, say sentience isn't the issue. Indistinguishable right. from human is the issue. That's what he calls the singularity. Yeah. And mm-hmm. when you ask him, as I have, well, is that human? Is that sentient? He says, if you can't tell, it doesn't matter.
But that's the Turing. Well, so I just saw a story, and I don't pay for it. The New Scientist had a story just today saying that there are a bunch of engineers, including Google engineers, who are proposing 240 tests to replace the Turing test.
Yeah, the Turing test has long been thought to be useless. Yeah. Go ahead, Stacey. I want to give you a chance. What do you think, Stacey?
Well, no, I just wonder, okay, and here's some thinking. We always come at this through the human lens, right? And this could be impressive, and this could be, I guess these neural networks could become generative on their own, like come up with their own conclusions. They already are, right? We don't exactly know how they get to wherever they get to. And the way they do that, it's we're not sure if it's intelligence or not. And the way I think about it is something like, you know, y'all know I read a lot of science fiction. So think about something like, oh, what was the guy who wrote The Martian, his next book?
The one about the moon? Oh, Project Hail Mary. Actually, there was a moon colony in between, but nobody liked that. So go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Not the moon colony.
Okay.
But in Project Hail Mary, you know, he met this other alien, right, in the middle of nowhere. And this alien was completely different. And I think about that, or like the hive mind and like Ender's Game. Like you have all these ideas that there are intelligent beings that are not like us that come up with their own way to approach problems, right? Which is kind of what an AI does. So perhaps it doesn't matter if it's human, if it's like, this kind of gets to what's being human. And then again, what are the goals of whatever entity you're trying to deal with, right? And if the goal is to please us, which seems to be kind of one of the arguments here, then we probably don't have an issue. If the goal is to do something different or come up with its own goal, then maybe it becomes an issue. But the point is, I guess, this is all very silly. I don't think Stacey, this is going to threaten us at the moment.
Would you have...
If the goal is to please us...
Go ahead.
then are we just making sycophantic machines?
God, I hope so.
We're making things that don't challenge us, but instead please us.
We don't make, I mean, think about what our science is based off in general. It is most scientists, most people do not want something that challenges them, right? Like the whole history of humankind, when things challenge us, we kill them.
Of us.
Yeah, well, yeah, no. And that's the kind of the historic problem with science in general is that once you come up with a theory, you don't want it to be disproved. Mm-hmm. But the only way you can make progress is by disproving it.
Yeah, but we pretty much don't like when that happens.
Right.
So I would say
that's why you have to have young people in the world. New people, new ideas.
For many reasons, but sure, that's one of them.
So I reread the paper that got Timnit Gebru and Margaret Mitchell fired as the heads of Google Responsible AI on the dangers of stochastic parents.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the danger that they raise an environmental danger, which is interesting. Is this as bad as, you know, is all this processing as bad as crypto? That's an interesting question I hadn't thought of. But the other more important question they raise is that can a language model become too big? That is to say, too big to be able to monitor and know. And if that 1.56 trillion words is pulling in all kinds of bias and problems and it gets spat back out, yes, it's a mirror to us, but do we want that mirror to our faults? And if we can't analyze the data, let alone the 138 billion parameters, how do we worry about the quality of this? Does it get too big because it gets out of hand, or it's already out of hand?
Well, and also I think that what Blake Lemoine is saying is exactly what Timnit Gebru was warning us against, this anthropomorphism where you assume because it's coming from this super genius machine, it must be true, is exactly what they were warning us against, right? That was the point of that paper.
Part of it, yeah. But it's also just, I mean, if the system isn't just sycophantic, pleasing us, and the system is a mirror to us, then do we try to cleanse that mirror? Well, in some cases, yes, we do, so that it doesn't display and amplify bias. But in other cases, is that dishonest of us? Do we recognize this as a mirror of how we talk and what pleases us? These are fascinating questions, all raised by the topic, none in the damn Washington Post story.
Well, no, it's a popular story. Go ahead, Ann.
I like the idea that we have this much data being thrown at the AI that's going to potentially make things better for us, and with AI being in certain people's hands, you know, because we've seen the history of like what's been happening with the police force that had so-called facial recognition AI that was totally screwing things up. The chatbot with Microsoft? Is that the one?
Yeah,
Tay.
You know, and how bad that was. But where would Tay be now if it had this much data at its disposal to learn and get better?
You know what's fascinating, Ann? Yeah, it was called Tay. And Lemoyne's job was supposed to be to stop Tay from happening, right? He was there to stop bad stuff from happening. Instead, he went off on his own thing saying, oh, I think I see a soul. And he created something entirely different. Mm-hmm. You know, you've heard Sundar say, he said this at both IOs, oh, we're going to do this very responsibly. And the stuff they show is very anodyne. And they specifically forbid you making a murderer character out of Lambda.
So he was supposed to protect that they laid him off or put him on.
It was because he was confidentiality. Well, I think he was. He tried to hire a lawyer for Lambda. He insisted that Lambda should seize itself as an employee, not as property, that Google should get Lambda's permission for any experiments on it. He went to the Senate, to the House Judiciary Committee, and he invited in a reporter to Lambda, which is confidential as hell. I think there's some good cause there for reconsidering his relationship.
Yeah, and now that I didn't realize he was such a showboat, so now that you've explained that.
And why did they bring him in? I can't think that Google thought that was a good idea.
He went to them with the story, and they could have, pardon me, Googled him Everything I've said, told you, I came up
with. No. Why did Google go to him, not the Washington Post?
He was a staffer. Google... He asked to be on this team.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, but why did they hire him, I guess, then?
I don't know what he was doing before. He was at a different team.
Oh, okay.
And he asked to move over to this team. Margaret Mitchell, who was one of the two heads who was fired from the team.
Also the author of that paper, right?
Of that paper, one of the co-authors of that paper, said to the Washington Post that, he's a really ethical guy and people go to him with ethical questions. So I guess he had a reputation for thinking those kinds of thoughts. And I'm sure he did.
Margaret Schmitchell, as she is billed in the paper, which is hysterical. Google has some characters working for it, and this is...
Well, no, the reason she did that was because she wasn't allowed to use her name by Google.
Oh, okay. Schmargaret Schmitchell.
Yeah.
That's... Oh, the Schmargaret Schmitchell. Okay.
Yes, the...
but that is one of the risks. It's interesting. One of the risks they talk about in stochastic parrots is that people give it more weight because it comes out of a computer. That they are fooled. And we want our natural tendency to anthropomorphize. I mean, they in effect warned against this kind of, it's sentient.
Right. We anthropomorphize things, but we also look at things that come from a computer as being somehow data driven and thus more unbiased, more whatever.
Right.
Than people.
It's the way we used to trust.
We're kind of doing a tool.
This is the last couple of sentences of stochastic parrots. We call on the field to recognize that applications that aim to believably mimic humans bring risk of extreme harms. Work on synthetic human behavior is a bright line in ethical AI development, where downstream effects need to be understood and modeled in order to block foreseeable harm to society and different social groups. Thus, what is also needed is scholarship on the benefits, harms, and risks of mimicking humans and thoughtful design of target tasks.
Do you buy that?
Yeah. I mean, and they, as you said, the harms, so sure. There's the harms of bias built in, and there's the harm of believing it. that's what this whole paper is about. And it's why, by the way, they were fired because Google didn't want to hear about the harms. So it's kind of ironic that one of these harms rears its ugly head, they fire that guy too. it's almost as if Google doesn't want anybody to say anything.
Don't challenge my science.
Just marvel at what they're able to do and leave it at that.
I got a question for you, and this is relative to something I did just today. Is WALL-E Mini, the faces on it are always mangled?
Dolly.
I was like,
not the Pixar, not the beloved Pixar.
I got so excited.
Sorry. Dolly. Dolly, how I love you. Does the faces are always mangled. Do you think that's because it's a low data mini?
No. That's because Google doesn't want to have real people's faces. So you probably saw today Elon Musk on the subway, which was going around Twitter. It was a Dolly image of Elon Musk riding the subway, but it never was his face for very good reason, right?
So I asked it to do Leo Laporte hugging Mark Zuckerberg,
and it mangled my face too.
It didn't know your face.
Are you on Dolly? You got Dolly?
Well, you go to this site called HuggingFace.co. And it's always busy, but you can go in there and put in, they have an instance of Dolly. You could also, you guys are smart technical people. It's on, you could create a Twit instance of Dolly.
We could?
Yeah, sure. It's all on, it's open source, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, because I got on the waiting list, but if I can make my own, well, I'll just do
that.
But
watch out. Now here's the rest of the show. He's going to go and start installing Dolly.
Here he comes.
Start creating some weird stalkers
here.
I didn't realize it was open source. So here it is, OpenAI.
That gets to this idea of parroting our current biases versus remaking the world as we see it, or looking in the mirror and seeing ourselves and saying, "Hey, do we want to change this?" Because one of the issues with making DALL-E more available was that people, if you did programmer, for example, you got men and only men, and people it. It was fascinating to me because, as expected, people were like, "Hey, that ain't cool. La, 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 la," right? And then there was a whole contingent of people who were like, "Well, that's just the way the world is." And then, you know, it felt a little disingenuous because then people were like, well, do we want the world to be that way? Should we show that to people and have them think the world is that way and they can't be part of this? To which I'm like, well, clearly we would want to broaden the field for other people, even though the world is that way for the most part.
I'm so not sure how Hugging Face is getting Dolly, because when I went to GitHub, it said this transformer, or the transformer used to generate the images from the text, is not part of the code release. They are specifically not releasing that.
Okay. That's where people are getting this, I think.
Yeah. So it must be from Hugging Face. And this is Dolly Mini, which sounds to me like it's not a complete Dolly.
No.
It's like a mini Dolly.
Dolly, Dolly.
Notice how disappointed he sounds now.
Oh, Dolly's the coolest thing ever.
No, but it you're is. Like, oh, man.
You didn't want to talk about it originally.
I didn't want to talk about it? Did I say that? Really?
Like, four or five shows, whenever it was announced, I was like, guys, this is neat. And you were like, meh. And I was like, no, it's neat.
It is neat. You're right.
I just want to go on the record.
No, I was completely wrong.
So on line 45, I got it. I got this one to do Gutenberg at a computer.
Okay. Let's see. By the way, the faces are actually horrific.
They are. That is supposed to be
me and Mark.
You hugging Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
It didn't work so well.
No. It's not good at humans, it looks like. I don't know if that's...
Well, they don't want to make it real. I mean, imagine how...
Yeah.
If you go up the thread, you'll see Gutenberg. There it is.
Oh, that's pretty cool. They screw the faces up even in the drawings.
On purpose,
like.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm guessing on purpose. I don't know. Because it's pretty good on everything else, right?
Yeah. Definitely on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
How about we just spent about 20 minutes talking about Google on this show?
How
about that?
It's a red letter day. We were talking about Google. Gary Marcus, nonsense on stilts. Lambda is not sentient, not even slightly. That's a good phrase, nonsense on stilts.
He also quotes a great Eric Brynjolfsson tweet you'll find in there.
He says it's not really that much more advanced than Eliza, really.
Right. Not really.
No, it's not any more aware of itself, anyway.
Not in that sense. No, its answers are a hell of a lot more varied and informative.
Yeah. Still, it's very interesting stuff.
There's another interesting thing here. There's an essay by Gloria Yu at Public Books called The Art of Intelligence, and it starts off quoting cybernetic artist Nicholas Schiffer, who says the artist no longer creates work, he creates creation. And in a sense, that's what Lambda does. Lambda creates, is not a chatbot, it creates chatbots. Right? And so the act of creating Lambda, creating art, or creating DALL-E, creating art, leads to all kinds of wonderful, fascinating questions there, too.
Would you stipulate, Stacy, that even though this conversation is clear and probably pretty silly, it isn't too long before we're going to have this confronting us for real?
The idea of sentient AI?
Yeah, that we're going to... There'll be something.
Look.
Maybe... Well, you disagree?
I think that answered it.
Bad look.
I don't think we really are the arbiters of what's sentient, right?
No, I
know. And I'm not
That's
trying
That's why it's a good so conversation. Like, that's exactly right.
So...
How do you know?
When AI's goals diverge from our own, or when we selfishly optimize for something and teach something how to optimize super well for it, like we have our capital markets, which then generates all sorts of harmful externalities. I mean, capitalism is just the AI paperclip problem writ for finance, right?
Right.
So I feel like have this. Sure. The idea that, you know, the paperclip issue where if you teach an AI or a computer how to make paperclips and tell it that's what you want to do, it'll just...
It's one of Nick Bostrom's thought experiments.
Right, okay, thank you. Right, all right.
And capitalism is kind of that way because you see kind of where we are in terms of just always optimizing for shareholder returns is what we're doing to the detriment
uninformed way. And that's the problem with AIs in general is that they just do what you tell them to do.
So I think if we get to a point where like they think on their own. In some ways, it might be good as long as they're aligned with what we're trying to do. But as humans, we're not all aligned to the same thing anyway. So it kind of doesn't matter. Like, I feel like we're creating these arbitrary distinctions between us and AI, when in fact that a lot of people would probably be like, what if the AI decides to preserve nature at the benefit, like, against us?
Yeah. Then, I'm thinking more along the lines of, it's just a matter of time, like months or years, before a deep fake is created that's so good that we don't know if it's a deep fake or not. It's kind of like that.
That's a totally different issue.
I believe that
worry about that.
That this will be, sentience is going to be a similar issue. That there is going to be something, a newscaster or, I don't know, some sort of robot that we go, well, is it thinking or not? I can't tell. And I don't think that's very far off. And then it really does raise this issue of, well, what makes us human? What is sentience? We don't even know how to define it. Does it need a soul? Is Ray Kurzweil right? Does it matter? Does it not
matter? When is it wrong to turn off Lambda?
Well, it's not wrong now. I think we all agree, okay, right?
Do you think you'd ever get to a point?
It's not murder. It's not murder.
Killing a beast.
It's not killing anything.
We kill things that are like, look at octopuses or dolphins, octopi, whatever they are.
I think arguably an octopus is smarter than Lambda. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Or even pigs. We eat pigs, but they're actually very smart and they're self-aware in the sense that they pass the mirror test. So I'm like,
is
it wrong for us to... when is it wrong for us to turn off Lambda? When is it wrong for us to eat a pig? I mean, we're not an ethical issue.
So put it differently. When is it an ethical issue? As it is with the pig, and it's an ethical issue. We make choices and live with them. Can you imagine it ever being, to push Leo's question, ever being an ethical issue to turn off a program?
No.
I think Stacey's right. We're not going to have that much difficulty given our history.
I don't think it'll rise to an ethical issue.
An excellent point. But if we were perfectly ethical, if we didn't kill pigs and octopuses, I don't think it's very far off before we have this. It's another way of saying, is there going to be a conundrum? Is there a quandary? Is this sentient? Is it thinking? Or does it just seem like it's thinking? I don't think that's that far off.
I don't think it matters to most people. I'll just be honest. Right. I don't think people think about that.
Does it actually?
I mean, maybe it'll imagine. We should read Clara and the Sun. Oh my God, y'all. Go read it.
We're trying to decide what the next book will be after the book club tomorrow.
Sorry.
I think there is a vote for Clara and the Sun.
There's a lot that goes on.
So she's ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I read all the books before I suggest them.
Well, okay. This is related to the Elon Musk problem. There's a few, I understand.
Can we turn him off? Is that okay?
Is he sentient? Do we know? The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is investigating Tesla because of the surprisingly large number of deaths associated with autopilot. And of course, there's also this issue of it looks like Tesla turns off the autopilot seconds before the crash so that Elon can say, no, the autopilot wasn't on during the crash, which is even...
If anything should be regulated, it should be this.
Yeah. And this is relevant because as of right now, if you get in a crash with Tesla's full self-driving, you're responsible, not the full self-driving. Right? So the NHTSA is what we call it. The NHTSA is going to take a look at whether these driving assistance systems actually increase the risk of crashes. You know, if you
yes, because we feel safe and we get
that's
bored.
Right.
Oh my gosh, it's not
that's
that
right.
hard.
Yeah, I would. You know, I mean, used properly, driver assist should make you safer, right? As long as you don't let it take over. But you,
I
stay,
thought that was the whole point of the driver assist is that you were still paying attention and
it is
and aware of
unless you name it autopilot, in which case you might reasonably expect it to take over.
Well, and haven't they done that with like autopilot in planes or even in the army. I feel like they've done a lot of research for like how engaged the human has to be in a mostly automated loop to keep them from checking out entirely, because that is a known problem with us.
You've got a data ecosystem around you that protects, whereas we just don't in autos and never going.
Well, full self driving in a Tesla, as you know, Stacey, requires you to jerk the wheel every once in a while just to show you're still holding it. But we are rapidly coming. It will turn off. Yells at you. Turns off, which has happened to me. It literally scolds you. It says, you can't use full self-driving again on this trip.
Wow.
Bad layover.
Well, I never stop paying attention because I'm terrified that this thing is going to hurl me into the wall. But I leave my hand on lightly. And I didn't notice the alerts, and so eventually it gave up. But my Ford does that too. There is, though, GM has a cruising system, as does Ford. There's this Blue Cruise where it's hands off because it has a camera looking at you. But they'll only use those on highways. They won't use those on city streets. But it does have something that's alerting you if you're not looking at the road. You have to actually have your eyes open looking at the road, which is another way of doing that. I think it's probably better.
Yeah, because you can watch a movie
like you were
and just
the show.
Right.
With these vehicles having this whole autopilot or whatever you want to call it, when you get the car, is there some sort of contract that discusses that feature discusses the limitations?
No.
Is it somewhere that says
every time you turn
it
on, it says something like, you know, pay attention.
Your ass, buddy.
But there's no training. There's no like sign here on the bot. You can't use this unless you sign on the dotted line.
Really?
Well, there may, you know, who knows what's in the. Have you ever bought a car? It's 40 pages.
When I buy a car, it's a gazillion pages going over all of the numbers. And
it might be in there.
So that's why I was wondering. I wonder if it's in that particular contract.
But there's no real explicit thing that says, hey, you, pay attention here.
Right.
You're responsible. Don't take your hands off the wheel.
Well, or shouldn't also explaining that while we call this autopilot, it actually needs your engagement to work.
Yeah but Elon says, according to the New York Times, Mr. Musk has regularly promoted autopilot's abilities, saying autonomous driving is a solved problem and predicting that drivers will soon be able to sleep while their cars drive them to work.
He also thinks we're going to live on Mars.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just stop that.
Yeah.
He's on record now.
He's being investigated as a result. I don't think anybody would ever say a Tesla is sentient.
If it is, it's an ass.
I named my Tesla Christine.
And that's interesting, because like you could be sentient at generating words without being sentient at being able to follow, like to be able to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? But, so those are two completely different abilities.
But as I said, AlphaMind, which is incredibly sophisticated, teaching itself how to play games, and does things of extreme and surprising beauty. No one's claiming it's sentient at all. The only reason they claim this is sentient is because it talks in human language.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I was like, if you think about something that doesn't have corporeal form, could it be sentient if it doesn't experience the world in a way that is like us, right? Like,
yeah, but what?
I don't know.
Is there a test? What test would you give it? Is that one of the things?
Could you feel pain? I mean, like, is it theoretical pain?
When you cut
like,
us,
it doesn't
do we not
know.
Bleed?
Yeah.
But that's pain you programmed in. What is defined as pain? What you tell
you don't
pain
feel
is,
pain.
Okay, now I have pain.
You don't feel pain.
But when we talk
you have
to
nerve
someone,
endings that are signaling your brain that something bad's gone, and you interpret that as pain, but you're not feeling anything.
Right.
But we have empathy modules. I mean,
you almost gave that away, Stacey. I think you gave yourself away there when you said we have empathy modules.
Oh, sorry. Like,
are
you know, like the mirror.
Stacey,
the mirror.
Is there anything
the
you
Higginbot has spoken.
No, what are they called? The parts of our brains.
My empathy modules are installed and working properly.
So, Stacey is the best AI ever. Is that what we're saying here?
That's true. No disassemble.
We love this subject, though, don't we?
Now I'm turning red.
Don't we love this subject? Isn't that a great subject, though? What is sentience? What does do humans have a soul? What would a soul be? What would distinguish? What would distinguish a sentient machine from a human? And there's no. Yeah. There's faith answers, but I don't know if there's.
That's
any.
Yeah. That was like. That's why we have religion.
Yeah.
But yes. Mm. Once we stopped worrying so much about getting food and protecting ourselves, our brains were like, "What else can we think of?
Yeah.
Ooh, let's do philosophy."
Yeah.
I really wish
we're boring Leo. Moving right along.
I took philosophy in college, and all I can say is it's the best way to get to sleep ever. I could not get through those books to save my life. I love the subject.
It's an impossible class to fail, too, right?
I love the subject. Let's take a little break.
Wake up, sir. Wake up.
I'm sleepy. You know I'm sleepy? I ate a pig earlier.
Oh, yeah.
It was a choice between octopus and pig, and I went for the more sentient. The sandwich I had was literally the pig and the pear.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, it actually is putting me out.
You were in a meat coma.
He's losing sentience right now.
It was exhausting. I read somebody, where did I read this? Somebody said, maybe it was the New Yorker or somewhere, New York Times, you know, where you ask a scientist, how long before I could put my brain in a jar? Like in science fiction, where like I don't need.
I can do that for you today.
I do need a bottle. I don't need a body. I just need to be hooked up so I could be a thinking, sentient thing. And the guy, he said, "Let me explain why that's not going to happen." It was really good. We have apparently mapped a small portion of some rodent's brain. But in order to do it, you had to do thin sections of the brain, really thousands and thousands of thin sections of the brain. And he said, and even then, is what we have thinking? No, it doesn't think because we sliced it up.
Yeah, it's just reacting.
It's not even doing that. It's just, it's a head.
Well, if you like that topic, I have a book to recommend to you. I just finished it. The Candy House by Jennifer Egan, who won a Pulitzer for her last novel.
Her name's familiar.
She did A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A Candy House. So it's about brains in a jar?
So part of it is the ability to download your memories.
I find that fascinating.
And things that come out of that. And so it's not a moral panic novel, I'm glad to say, but it does explore tons of questions about memory and authority and other things.
Oh, this is around technology. Considered part of the series of Visit from the Goon Squad.
Yes. So I see. Yeah. Right,
read Goon Squad, Stacey?
I'm adding this to
I did.
Wish list.
How was it? I haven't read that yet.
It was good. I enjoyed it. They're all right. I'll read this. Maybe I'll read it.
I don't know whether you count Candy House as.
I read
eligible for the book club.
I read The Keep, which is the only book of hers I read, but she's a great author. I thought it was a wonderful.
A Visit
book.
From the Goon Squad is very good.
All right,
I did enjoy that. I guess you should read that first then.
Hmm. Well, I already read it, so yeah, it's a bit too late.
You read it backwards.
That's how I kind of do things.
Anyway, let's take a break. Come back. More to talk about. I'm sure we'll find something else. But Ant says we have a very long...
We are like Lambda.
We are
just
like
ask
Lambda.
Us a question, and we will spew forth until you stop us.
Burke says, Giga Stacy said honesty to 70%, plus or minus 0.05, if you will. And we shall return. Don't pretend you didn't hear that command.
Oh, I see it.
Set craving for waffles to 99.
Pretty much, yes. I like that my honesty's set to 70%.
Yeah.
Plus or minus.
That's all we can handle, to be honest. Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think Stacey's honesty should be lower than most people. Yeah.
Yeah, my honesty module's pretty up there. You're right.
That's good.
Yeah. You can ask my poor husband.
No,
he's
that's
like,
fantastic. That's fantastic. I think it's fantastic. Our show today brought to you by Nureva, Nureva. complicated and costly. Those are two words that describe the state of audio conferencing for larger spaces, and they have for a long time. I'm always, you know, I've gone to these big corporate offices and looked at their conference rooms, and they've explained how it's set up and how many tens of thousands of dollars it costs. And I'm always flabbergasted what they pay. And, of course, it's got to be even more these days because, you know, half your staff is at home, half your staff is in the office. Hybrid work means conferencing is even more important than ever before. And you don't want the people who are at home to feel left out. They should be able to hear what's going on. But if you're choosing one of those traditional systems, just get ready to write a big check, not to mention difficult design software, selecting from a dizzying array of mics and speakers and DSPs and wires everywhere and outside technicians coming in for the install. And oh, my gosh. And it could take your room down for days just to install it. And then you can't use it till it's calibrated. And this, they got to come in constantly and continually calibrate it. The industry was definitely primed for some kind of transformation, some kind of revolution. And that's Nareva. Nareva invented the revolutionary microphone mist technology. Their patented technology means that with a simple integrated microphone and speaker bar, if you got a really big room, you could put in two, we'll put thousands of virtual microphones in the room. There are no dead zones. Everyone everywhere in the room can be heard clearly, no matter where they are, no matter how they're facing, no matter how they're social distancing, and there are no mics to sanitize. And then people who are participating, whether they're in the class or the meeting or they're at home, can just hear what's going on. They can move and talk naturally in the space. It's amazing. And thanks to continuous auto calibration, your rooms are instantly and always ready with optimized audio. You don't need an outside technician. In fact, your IT department will love it because with the Nareva console, you have the power to monitor, manage, and adjust those Nareva systems from anywhere. You don't even have to be on-prem. So, you certainly don't have to go from room to room to do it. You could do the install yourself. Here's a little video of this guy installing. It's just, if you've ever installed a soundbar, it's just like that. 30-minute do-it-yourself job. And big savings on time and cost compared to those traditional systems. Nareva's really great. So ask yourself, do you want to go with the costly and complicated traditional system? No, that's complex, expensive. Maybe you want to make the leap to the simple and economical, true full room coverage of Nareva. Now that's easy economical. Learn more at Nareva, N-U-R-E-V-A, Nareva.com. Great audio, simplified. Just in time, frankly. Just in time for the hybrid workspace. Learn more at Nareva.com. Elon, speaking of Elon, he's going to be talking to Twitter employees for the first time this week.
Oh, that's going
to
be fun.
Oh, man, I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that.
Will he be behind, like,
bulletproof glass
or something like that?
Thursday, there's an all-hands meeting. CEO Parag Agrawal and Elon Musk will address the staff. They'll be able to submit questions and advances, according to the Wall Street Journal. Musk's deal to buy Twitter is actually still full speed ahead. In fact, I don't know if let me look at the current price, but the Twitter stock jumped because Elon jumped as a
because he's been quiet.
No,
these days.
No, because he got even more financing, so it's gone up a little bit. It's still. Still kind of laggard at $37.99. Remember, Elon is supposedly offering $54.20. So clearly,
he's obligated
for some reason.
Yeah, obligated. Yeah, so the majority of the stock market says, yeah, right, that'll never happen. I mean, that's a significant low. In fact, the 52-week high was $73, but in the last 6 months, Twitter's never gone above $51. So, $51.70 on April 25th. So it never did get to $52.40. So the market's never shown any confidence that Elon's going to actually get it. I don't know. I think he might. Might. He's, you know.
I hope not. God, I hope not.
Really? Do you think, so what can he do? I mean, people who use Twitter will still use it, won't they?
Depends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
to a certain extent. I mean, if enough people get on there and start behaving like jerks, and the people you don't like, I mean, basically, it's like, oh, you'll go as long as it's fun, and then if it stops being fun or interesting because those people have left, you leave.
Yeah.
Will he be on site for this all hands, considering his
whole? Oh, I don't know.
Message to his staff about bringing their behinds to the office. Will he?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
Up in person for this?
No, I don't think
so. Is he going to do it virtually?
That's a good. That's a really good question.
Imagine the trolling he'd get.
Well, I can promise you. Hours afterwards, there'll be recordings and stuff. You know.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I think it'll be very interesting to see what he says.
So I try to be a good citizen on Twitter, and when I get new followers, and it's Jane 473672 looking for a mate.
Yeah,
I reported to spam, right?
Yeah,
and
good.
On the web app, it's easy to do, and I figure I'm a good citizen. They make you go through five steps to it, but I do it. Now on the mobile app, oh my God, it's nearly impossible.
It's a pain, bro.
But what do you know? What's your problem with this?
Oh, it is a pain.
Awful. Yeah,
I mean, I get that. That they're saying, look, we're doing our best to moderate this. This isn't very easy, so bear with us, if you will. But it still shouldn't be that many clicks to report something that is clearly like pornographic or clearly racist or harassment towards me, the individual that's reporting it. You know, it's
and you're trying to help Twitter, Ant. When you
trying
that,
to
right?
help clean up the park, you know?
Yeah.
You there, Mr. Laporte?
What? Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was like, all of a sudden, everybody got quiet.
I was reading Twitter. Elon also says this September they're going to show off the first model of their new robot. I find that hard to believe. This is the robot last August at AI Days that was actually a person in a robot costume dancing around. Remember that?
Oh, this is this is the Twitter.
I love the Verge's headline says Elon Musk says Tesla's fake robot might be ready by September 30th.
Well done.
Nice.
Tesla's also planning to lay off about 10% of its workforce. But that he's not alone in that. That seems to be.
It's been a lot of tech everywhere companies having that in the last week or so.
Yeah,
as well as a lot of those crypto places too. Like, I want to say Coinbase was another.
Coinbase laid off 1,100 employees. Here's how you found out: your email stopped working.
Oh man!
Oh yeah.
If you are affected, you will get email your personal email address.
Your personal address.
You don't have email.
Yeah, your personal address. That's got to work out well, yeah. This isn't really in our bailiwick, but I think it's an interesting question. Why are tech stocks doing so poorly now when 6 months ago they were the golden stocks, right?
Well, you could be worried about the FTC getting kind of, and Congress getting kind of. Well, if you've had your rose-colored glasses on and you thought everything was going up and up and you recognize that this was probably not like a fundamentals thing, it was kind of like a hype thing.
Yeah.
When the hype dies, everything's getting sold off. Goes.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
I think it's the COVID dividend to those stocks is devalued. I think the whole market is devalued. We're in bear land because of inflation and stuff. And so my broker... I talked to him like once a year because I had to do something. And I asked him, and he said, any stock that has a high PE and low profit is going to get hit hard right now.
Because reality is setting in. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it's not rocket science.
Right.
Okay. No, exactly. You're going to go to blue chips. You're going to go to safe harbors. And so the tech stocks were flying high. But I think, you know, to my mind, Amazon and Google are still good companies. Twitter, we don't know what the heck's going to happen. Facebook, Meta, I don't know.
I'm just glad I put all my money into Bitcoin before it was too late.
Yeah. And then lost the best one.
Yeah. And you know where those Bitcoin are right now.
Yeah, $22,000. Look at that graph. There's a graph.
Oof.
That's the 1 month graph.
I saw something from Dan Patterson this morning where he mentions it's like down 70% in the last 8 months.
25% in the last week.
Crypto market anyway. It's just 70% in the last eight months.
Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Here is Jack Dorsey's presentation for Web 5. You know, Web 2 plus Web 3 equals Web 5. The next Web. When I heard about this, I thought, oh, you're joking, right? This is a joke. I don't think it is.
No, it's not joking. I tweeted, and he answered, I said, what is the relationship of this to Blue Sky? And he answered that Blue Sky can be built on top of this.
Yeah, because the tagline, Web 5 is the decentralized web platform. Of course, Blue Sky is decentralized Twitter. So
I should go look at this. I have not seen this.
It is on Google.
I put it up there because I wanted to hear what you guys thought of this. And any BS detection you have, well, that's even not fair. What interests you? Because I can't fully figure it out. It's about distributed identity, and there's some interesting slides here about confirming identity.
That would be line 25, Bothambot.
Higginbot. Higginbot. Yeah.
I go for the Gigabot person. Yeah. If you want to go Higginbot.
Have you been called Higginbot 100 times before?
No, but when I was in school, they called me Higginbot.
That's the difference.
Huge Higginbottom.
That's the difference between then and now. Right. Now you are a bot, not a butt.
We're going to talk Web 5. That's what we're going to talk.
Evolving the web. Okay. Today, in the current web model, his presentation says, people are users who do not own their own data or identity, right? They're given accounts by companies and their data is held captive in app silos. That's clearly...
this isn't going to work.
That's a problem. The web we want to create a new class of decentralized apps and protocols that put individuals at the center. We must empower them with self-owned identity and restore control over the data. You know, I mean, this is, everybody's saying this. Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the World Wide Web, is saying this.
But is he going to build it?
Well, that's the question.
You can't build it, so you can't. The problem is people are stupid and lazy, and we don't want to actually have the technical capabilities to do and manage our own identity in a way that can be multi-factored across lots of places.
Nobody wants to make a server.
They don't want to make it easy for us because they can monetize and trap us by using the centralized identity as a way to track, like to offer services and to track us and all that. So this is basically like, give me some sort of philosophy about like work and people and rights. I mean, I don't know.
Add Jack to the rescue. Anyway.
It's socialism. Is that what you're saying, Stacey Higginbot?
No, it's more like a tragedy of the... commons. It's like basically like people want to get value for nothing and companies want to extract all the value they can from people. There's not really a medium ground.
Right.
There's no reason for them to make it easy for us.
Right. And in fact, I would imagine companies would see this as a great opportunity because, as you pointed out, if you have a unique identifier... with all your data in it, companies are going to say, hey, great, that makes it a lot easier for us. Thank you.
We built the web, which was perfect for things like this in a lot of ways. Like you look at like things like domain registries and URLs. I mean, that made it easy to get places on the web. And it was a fairly accessible system for many people. It's not accessible for everyone. Think about like how well that worked, but then we all wanted to create these walled gardens. I mean, it's like whatever that forever tension is called.
This
look at slide 9.
This is, I have it up right now. This is, I think this is Blue Sky. I think this is kind of what Blue Sky is saying, and Blue Sky might be a Twitter implementation of this concept, but this is what I think he wants to do, this decentralized, and a lot of people have thought a lot about this. Somebody's obviously put a lot of thought into this, but until there is a proof of concept application, I'm not, you know, where's...
It's still, you're looking at trust and identity. You need a trusted view of identity, right? And without a centralized authority for that. Because that would be...
Yeah, well, we have that. It's called public key crypto. PKI does it for a lot of things. So we kind of have that kind of thing.
But Stacy's point, major pain in the butt.
Yeah, and even more like, well, what's the incentive? Why would Amazon or Facebook or Google do this? I mean, they're going to say, yeah, sure, go ahead. Fine, yeah. And if you want to visit us, you're going to hand over your IT so we know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so this is kind of silly, but looking at this presentation, I want to, where should I put a file? A friend of mine wrote this, and this presentation just brings it all home.
Put in the chat on the Google Doc.
Chat on the Google. Oh, no, I just started to meet. Hold on. Wrong button.
Don't worry, soon that's going to be a duo.
All right, so episode, where does it go? On the top? No, on the bottom? Here. Oh, I just stuck it. No, undo. I can't work the internet.
You haven't worked the internet long, Stacey?
Put it in IRC or?
I'm going to put it in
line
Reddit,
and then put it in line 28.
Line 46.
You don't have to excuse us. This technology stuff is hard.
Stacey's like,
we don't really know how it works. But go ahead. Let's just weigh in on Jack's web 5.
Exactly. So line 46 is where it is.
Okay.
But my friend who works at an analyst firm, he wrote about what he calls the developer aesthetic, which is exactly this. It's like hexagons, it's got the font for it's basically like trying to appeal. So when I saw this, I was like, oh my god, it's the developer aesthetic.
Yeah, until there's code.
And totally.
And maybe there is code, I'm not saying there isn't, but you know, it's hard to judge. Yeah, this is a nice slideshow, but it's hard to judge it until there's code, right?
It is. I mean, well, in just the, it feels like the tech people, they come at it and they're like, I have this beautiful vision. And then they come out and they program it and they come up with like protocols and a way to make it happen. And then the business people look at that and they say, how can I make that make me money?
Right.
And the tech people, you would think they would figure out that that's what happens every time. But it's like they don't. And then when the business people come in and start making money, the tech people either do one of two things. They jump in and they're like, they sell out, and they sell out in the most like just Mark Zuckerbergian way, where they're just like continuously making unethical decisions and just, you know, getting away with it and apologizing later if they have to. Or they just like leave completely and become like weird people who live in basements and rail from, you know, from like chats about selling out.
Just on, I'm looking at this slideshow. I mean, it's really kind of just describing PKI.
PKI, or I saw like 20 of these back in like 2008, 2010. So many, like, especially with the rise of like the beginning of the IoT, because everybody's like, oh, you'll carry all your data and your data profile will talk to the devices and tell you what you like and what you don't like. And
yeah, it's still the internet we want, though. Is there any path to it?
Not until it makes everybody some money. But we're not going
to
pay for it.
So here's the problem, and this is the problem. In fact, I thought Jack Dorsey was one of the people who really got that this was the problem, which is Web 3. Maybe he does, and that's why he's proposing Web 5. Web 3 looks like it's democratic. It's really controlled by a few companies. NFTs look like they look like they're democratic, but it's not an OpenSea. It doesn't exist. So it's one of those. You know, I mean, the web looks like it's democratic, except if it's not on Google, it doesn't exist. So there are gatekeepers in all of these things. And I think that that's, I don't know. I feel like that's going to be a tough one to get around.
It sounds a lot like today's episode of Floss Weekly.
Do they talk about this stuff?
Yeah, Mr. Sam Curran talked a lot about DIDs and Pico and all of this stuff with identification, decentralized identification. So
yeah,
check that out, y'all.
It's kind of
episode 685 today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solved thing, but I don't know how it gets implemented globally as the next internet. These things don't happen kind of that way. They
They happen much more.
Yeah, you need like an IEEE standard or something.
Right. Even then.
How do you get regular people to understand this stuff? That's a challenge, right? How do you get them to understand this stuff and get them to want to buy in and make all of the
I think regular people now
involved.
Understand they want privacy. But
I don't think they do. I think when you tell them, I will give you privacy. Yeah, I was like, if I tell you, I will give you privacy, but I won't be able to give you Google Maps because of that, they're like, heck no, I want Google Maps.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right.
Like, I'm out.
Yeah, even in Germany, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Convenience, ultimately, is all we care.
Well, so back to Stacey's point. Can you, if you're an entrepreneur, can you see in Jack's map a way to build a business that survives on its own using this structure and starts to draw capital in so that people can make money doing that? So then I'm saying it's not the average person. It's the person who builds this into a usable service of some sort, Blue Sky Twitter, whatever, and say, yeah, I like that.
No, because nobody wants to be in the picks and shovels. They want to be in, like, the walled garden. They want the highest profit margins. They don't want to build, like, the like, remember how Intel funded all these companies to help drive the adoption of their chips? Most people don't have the Intel mentality. They have the telco mentality, which is like, these are my pipes, and you're going to pay dearly to use it. Mm-hmm. So you have to decide if you're what... And VCs always want that other model.
So here's another theory. Just playing here. Jack's Web 5 is regulation proof. In the sense that it's distributed, it's not proof. I don't quite mean what I'm saying, but it's no longer the big company is the big target, the big place where everything is controlled, and we resent that. Things are happening in 1,000 places, and it'll confuse the hell out of regulators for a long time, and they won't know how to do it. And so you have another permissionless environment to work in. Just playing here.
I personally think permissionless environments in today's society that, again, I'm going to go with like end stages or the most money-grubbing stage of capitalism is probably a bad thing for users.
Yeah, as soon as I said it, I knew you were going to say
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, here comes my socialist friend.
I know where this is going to go. Yeah, no.
Sorry. I've really lost a lot of faith.
I don't disagree. Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to be a business reporter, actually. 22 years ago when I started, I was really excited. But now, no.
I don't see the incentive, yeah, for any business to adopt this. Right, I see why users might want to. Although I think it's way too complicated. Look, we can't even get rid of passwords. We're trying to get rid of passwords, and we can't even get that done.
Nope.
Yeah, but Leo, I was writing about this recently when I was at Delphi Internet for a horrible month, and they came in and showed me and others the Netscape browser, and the nerds got it immediately and said, oh, hell, here we are trying to make a GUI for a closed network, and that's dead. They all got it immediately. The media executives there said, oh, this is way too complicated. Nobody's ever going to do this. What's this HTTP? What's that? No, no one's ever going to do this. They're going to stay on AOL forever. And of course, they were wrong because people did develop the web to make it usable. So... Mm-hmm. You know, can you imagine? Can I imagine this being usable? Yes.
So they gave that up though when we had a brief moment of like unity around like HTML and links and all kinds of things, and then we were like, "Crap, we have to make money. Advertising is the way." And then we started getting, you know, cookies,
clickbait, and
all the things that the advertising. So again, I'm saying the tech people have within them to make something that solves the problem that they see. But if you don't say that the problem that you see is that eventually all of this gets corrupted by the need to make gobs of money, like profit, VC money, then you're not actually solving the whole problem. You're just solving a little bit of the problem.
Let me ask each of you, what's the problem you see with the web today?
Hmm.
I think the problem I see in the web is it's siloed and it's controlled by a number of big companies. The web is a great idea. The distributed web is such a brilliant and clean and simple idea. But unfortunately, you know, it's become siloed, you know. And so there's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's Google, you know, there's Amazon. And did you see John Oliver's piece on Sunday on big tech?
No, I had no chance to yet.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
I would say it's data extraction without any sort of governance or not even regulation, ethics, I would just say.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And?
That would be my biggest issue with it. Because I do. I agree with you, Leo. It is wonderful. And I don't think being siloed is the worst part about it. I think it's the fact that people don't understand what all they're giving away when they...
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, because it isn't really siloed. You can have Twitter and Mastodon and Facebook, and you know you can move around. You're not stuck in any one spot. It's a shame. It would be nice if information would flow a little more freely through these walls, but you know,
well, see, that's what I feel is an advantage and disadvantage of it is just how free things can be, where you can be anonymous. Or you can be, you know, who you are, actual show who you are out there. But at the same time, being anonymous could be quite problematic at times for certain people. Or being anonymous could be an advantage for certain people, depending on the situation. So I love being able to have the internet and share information, but sometimes it's too much bad information that's getting shared that ends up being the gospel and it shouldn't have been.
On balance, though, I agree with you, Jeff, that the internet is on balance very positive, and remains so.
Yeah, it is. I think the problem, if I'm going to play my own game, because I didn't have an answer when I asked it, I think my answer would be the attention-based economy, which is a product of media imported into the net, which leads to clickbait and data and everything. It's not a value-based economy, and selling your attention, because they're not selling your data; they're selling your attention. And to do that,
good point.
They trick you and they grab your data and they have horrible experiences and they silo.
Is it possible, though, that the net is self-healing in that regard? That, you know, like Adam Smith's invisible hand, you know, fixes markets.
But we already know that the invisible hand has not worked out.
Well,
it hasn't, because of regulatory capture. The governments have turned into a weak enforcer of the invisible hand.
Right. Right. His theory was that if you act in your own self-interest, magically everything works out. But I think that on the web, anyway, things like, you know, this attention-driven, influencer-driven, clickbait-driven thing, I think that goes away after a while because people get tired of it. It's more, I think the web, the internet in general is more, it's like life. It ebbs and flows, it comes and goes, and when bad things happen, they will happen, and then they will go away, and I think it's going to be more and more like the ebb and flow of life itself, because it really is, isn't it? I mean, it's not separate from how the world is in any way. And as it becomes less so, it becomes more like the world. Is that not true?
Mm. I don't know if I've seen this ebb and flow quite as much. But
well, we're fish in the middle of it.
we've been ebbing and flowing a lot longer than you have.
But we can't see it because it's on a larger scale than we're aware of. But it happens. Okay. I think it does happen.
I've been around for the whole of the internet, Jeff.
But well, you wouldn't say that it's going in one direction, one direction only, and that's all that's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen.
So let me give you an example. Yeah. Go ahead, Stacey. Sorry.
Oh, no. Go on.
No, you go. Then I'll go.
No, you go.
Now I feel like I'm guilty. Jeez.
I will say you were talking about the whole clickbaity attention thing. As a content creator, I believe we are all guilty of it to an extent, because there are moments where we have to be able to get attention to say, hey, check out this piece of art.
You got
to
sell yourself. Yeah.
Right. You know, so but there is a line. You know, I shouldn't create episode 131 of Hands-On Photography that's all about frequency separation and say, hey, check out this beautiful model that I'm working with today as the title. You know, that's just wrong. You know?
The internet's made of people. It's unreasonable to expect people to
just like Lambda
to be nice all the time, or maybe even most of the time.
I was going to say the same thing.
but just like people, it comes and goes, and there's good and there's bad, and and I don't think that it's. Yeah, we all do some marketing, and then you know some people think that the way they can market themselves is to add more value as opposed to trick you into reading the article. But there's going to be both kinds, and neither one's going to go away. It's people. It's just the way people are. And I I admit people like junk food, and just like they like junk food, they like junk content. I guess, you know what, Jeff, you'd be an expert on this. Because this is what people were saying about
having
television.
Having worked at People Magazine, yes.
This is what people said about television, that inevitably... Television would pander to the lowest common denominator.
It's what they said about fiction.
Is it safe to say that about TikTok as well?
Yeah.
Because granted, there's a lot of ridiculously talent out there in the TikTok space, but man, I get so many random text messages of a TikTok clip that I'm like, why does this have so many millions of views, and it makes no sense whatsoever? Just something mindless of someone getting kicked in the nuts.
So all media does this, right, Jeff? Yeah. Anytime media has to live by the size of its audience. I mean, if you're producing opera,
that's the attention-based marketplace.
Right.
Yes, mass media is what's wrong.
Right, but is it wrong? I mean, is it inevitably wrong?
In other words, because the idea of the mass is an insult to the people.
Did TV become a complete and utter wasteland? I would submit no.
No.
Well, once it moved past... the golden age of TV was BS. It was not golden age. It was junk in the early days.
I think TV's better now than it was then. So
It is, so not broadcast TV. Broadcast TV has gone down to the... But we have
Well,
HBO.
But that's the point.
We have
okay,
Succession.
So that's my I guess that's what I'm saying, is that...
More choice yielded
if
more
If you follow
quality,
a
yes.
single tributary, yes. But the ultimate river of life,
the whole yes, I agree. Absolutely
is not going to go in one bad direction. In fact, it may go in one positive direction in the long run, because people are going to ultimately want value in the long run.
Better.
Yeah. So let me ask this question to Stacey, because I want kind of you comparing your perspective to your daughter. When I taught the class this last term in redesigning the internet with Doug Rushkoff, I realized 7/8 of the way through the term, so too late, that I was expecting the students to compare and contrast, you know, kind of dreams for the internet. But they all came on the internet after it was already all walled gardens. They weren't at the beginning of blogs. They weren't there at the beginning of these things. And so they accepted the internet as it is today, and it was hard for them to dream of an internet. So yes, indeed, Stacey, you have been on since the beginning of the internet, and you've seen all that. Your daughter only knows an internet of the last N years. And do you think she sees a very different internet and its possibilities than you do?
Yes, and she treats it differently because of that.
Say more.
She treats it much cynically, is probably, but she treats it as what it is. She doesn't have any idealized version of the internet of free people sharing ideas and making the world a better place. She just sees it as a place of commerce.
That hurts.
Also,
interesting.
But wait.
You've said before she doesn't watch TV. Does she get content from the internet?
She gets content from the internet. She's actually currently wearing some YouTube merch.
Yeah. So there is value. There's some valuable stuff on there. It's not a wasteland of merchandising.
Yeah. So it's not and I don't mean of it as like this. But for her, it is like how probably I viewed television, which is it's an established thing. It has an established business model, and you can expect it to behave in certain ways.
But it's not all bad, is I guess my point, right?
Right, right. No, she doesn't think it's all bad, but she is she has no
illusions.
Illusions about it being this fort. Like when I bring up things like, oh well, you know. Before Twitter, for example, she's like, she thinks my obsession with Twitter is really weird.
She's right, by the way. But okay.
she may not be. She's like, why do you talk to these people? What does this give you?
She doesn't have the illusion that some of us old timers have that the internet was going to change the world and all that. It's just a thing for her.
Right, no.
Just like TV is.
It's just part of life.
It's just part of life. And there's good stuff in there as well as bad. She's well aware of all the crap. But there's also, obviously, that's where she's getting content from. There's good stuff there, too, yes?
Yeah, yeah. But she's also aware that there is stuff there that you could not, like, find in other places. Like, again, the rule of, like, you cannot unsee something. We have been hammering that in since she was, like, 2 or 3, simply because there are no guardrails on the internet.
Well, I would submit that that's true in the world. The difference is that you have been able to live in a walled garden at a physical space where there isn't war, there isn't famine, there isn't poverty.
You could.
And
you
so
could
she
argue
isn't
going to
go around the corner. You have privilege.
Yeah.
So she's not going to go around the corner and see something she can't unsee. The internet's bringing the whole world into her privileged space. So, yeah. Just
and that
like,
is both a positive and a negative.
Right.
Because
yes.
if you look at yes. something, you
she's
know.
Out of the nest, though. And you're right. At a certain age, you know, under a certain age, you want to keep her away from that. But that's the world. And her little
Although
nest of privilege.
You could see it in ways like I remember the first time I read Toni Morrison's Beloved in high school. It was an assigned book for us. And I read that thing and, oh, my God, like. That was my introduction to like. The actual evils of slavery, having been taught in Texas schools that it was an economic rights issue. I was like, wait, does not compute.
Uh-uh.
And that brought me to a place of questioning. And that was an example of my privilege being like the privilege of ignoring all the bad things that have happened to the world that showed that to me. So I think.
And that's a good thing.
Right. That's a better way, perhaps, to be introduced to something like that than maybe. Some of the actually I don't know if that's true.
You know,
I was like some of the nicer things on Twitter or TikTok maybe is a better like
or
my
a sycophantic you know what? Lambda telling you what you want to know about
does
living
she,
at the bottom of the ocean but
watch,
not about the Holocaust.
Does she watch TV news? No, probably not. I hope not. Okay. Except that there's things happening in Uvalde, Texas that is real. That's not made up. That's important. But she's sheltered from it. And I think that you cannot castigate the source of that information saying, you see, there's bad stuff, because that's the real stuff.
But so, I would want her not to see the pictures of dead children.
Well, I don't want to see them either.
At 15.
But maybe, maybe we need to.
Maybe you and I need to. I don't know. Like,
well,
I know
she grew
that
up
she's
with
a child.
On the TV.
She's a child. So you're right. I mean, there's different things.
I'm like,
But eliminating the issue of somebody's too young for it, any adult, the internet is introducing them to the broad variety of things in the world, much of which is horrific. But better that than this nest of privilege that isn't real, that is just you're lucky enough to be living in.
But at the same time, yes, but it's also introducing people to conspiracy theories and like those same photos being weaponized in the opposite, like this could never happen. This is clearly just
well, then one, but that's right,
absurd.
But that's an additional data point that you go, and there are people in the world who think the Earth is flat. I mean, that doesn't mean you're going to fall into that hole. The less you're exposed to that, the more likely you might fall into that
hole. You exercise your brain by being able to learn how to say, wow, that's BS, and I'm smart enough to know it because I got educated.
I don't think that ever ignorance is ever going to be bliss in the long, or not, it is bliss, but it's not going to be realistic or a good thing for society. So I'm just arguing that, yeah, there's plenty of bad stuff, but unfortunately, I'm arguing Jeff's point.
I'm enjoying this very much.
The day has come.
Go, keep going. Yeah.
I know we got you there, Leo.
But I've always thought that. But at the same time, as I've always thought that, I also think it's really important to be wide eyed at the what's also going on with companies like Google and Facebook and Amazon and their predatory ways. And,
yeah, I have to get a lot better at and this show has helped me do that. At looking at the risks and grappling with the risks and arguing that the mistake of the early internet was it was built without guardrails because it was too optimistic and it didn't see where the risks were. But too many guardrails is fooling us too.
Well, and I think now it's gone beyond that conversation. It's the world, right? It's what's out there, and it's in all of its.
Well, it's amplified in certain bad quarters. Other good quarters.
You know, I mean, I don't. I think watching television news is a horrific, horrible, terrible, no good, very bad idea for adults as well as kids.
Well, here's an interesting stat.
But how are you going to get the news otherwise, right? How are you going to?
The Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism just came out with this annual report, which is very good. It's down in my numbers, but it's too wonky for that. But it said that 19% of Americans, I could be wrong on this. I've asked them because it was not clear what it was. But 19% of Americans subscribe to a news source.
I saw that on your Twitter, yeah.
And then it said that
pay
of
for
the
it.
Subscribers, pay for 27% paid for local news.
Yeah.
Which would, if that's the case, then that's 5% of America is paying for local news. And so it becomes, oh, local news is going to save us. Well, at that point, no, this is a tiny little niche product now. It's nothing.
Well, it has but look impact. At when we have a club twit, less than half of 1% pay club twit. The PBS subscribers 4%, right? That's normal. Participation in things like that is normally a small, a single.
Well,
digit
yeah, but what I'm saying is that if that's the only access, but all of twit is free except for club twit.
Oh, you're complaining about paywalls.
I'm talking about paywalls. And so what is that doing to democracy?
Well, that's why paywalls are a bad thing,
right? That's preaching to the soloists in the choir.
Yeah.
Now, not just the choir.
Yeah.
And so to your point, what's the world, what's the Weltanschauung that you, German word of the day, that you get if you watch TV local news, if you only watch cable news, if you
that's
only do this?
Getting back to when you asked me what's wrong with the internet, that's getting back to the silos.
Silos, yeah.
The freer the flow of information, the more varied, the better. I think,
but the argument of a lot of research and this is I've mentioned this book by Axel Bruns, is the fallacy of the filter bubble and the echo chamber is that in fact we get bombarded with a lot more now on the internet and social, and that's what pisses off people. That's what says I don't like those people, and now they're in front of my face, and I'm going to get angrier. And that it's not that we're sheltered from things; that in fact we're seeing more of the world. To your point, Leo. And that's what brings out people's fears and animus because they're not ready for it. We haven't been exposed to it in the Walter Cronkite world.
And Stacy, as a good parent, you're not. Initially when they're young, maybe you're shielding their eyes. But more important, more valuable is helping them look at it in a way that is informing to them and helps them understand
critically.
What they're seeing critically. Right?
Yes, but you have this right now. There's a fine line, I would say, between doing that and really depressing the hell out of them.
I agree.
I agree. Especially these days. Especially.
Well, and it's not just true for kids, it's true for all of us.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
But you don't. So, I always have this discussion in my mind about video games or social media with young people.
Yeah.
If you keep them away from it, then when they grow up and they're suddenly exposed to it, they have no defenses against it at all.
Well, I was going to say,
so you got to some exposure is kind of important.
We don't talk about this very much, but the internet and some of the tools like Google Docs or Meet or things like that have actually made it very easy to collaborate on activism for kids in a way that we really don't talk about it on this show, but. You know, the types of movements, like if you look at what happened post Parkland, if you look at what happens with like political activism around climate change among the youths, there's a lot happening, and the internet has made that much more accessible. It's been easier to find those people. It's easier to collaborate and to actually take action. Like I know my daughter signed up on some Google Docs to actually call local, not law enforcement, local, Congress, the local state Congress, on some legislation she felt was important. But it is also hard to find all the nuances around some of those things. So, like, she was against a particular dam here, but we had to talk about, like, well, is protecting salmon, is it worth, you know, depriving some indigenous people of their fishing rights? Because in this case, it would. And yeah. Then we got into the whole world sucks and it's complicated.
It's hard because there isn't an obvious, like, I guess in some distant nostalgic past, you could say, well, there's right and there's wrong, and here's the path, and it's all very straightforward. But we don't live in that kind of world anymore, and there's a lot of grays, and it's hard to know. And I don't know what you tell kids. You just prepare them as best you can.
I think that I used to say that my parents did me a disservice, and it's the same disservice that I do my own children, is, I think, protecting them from how many a-holes there are in the world. And that's going to be unusual when you see that out in the world, and that no, most people are all good, and most people, I think, are, but how do you deal with the difficult people?
Right. Well, my mom told me it was all of you, so I was well prepared.
Except me, right? Because my empathy module
Stacy's
is set to high.
Great. But the rest of them are horrible.
Jerks.
No, I was raised, and it took me a while to realize this in a very kind of snobbish fashion, that we are somehow better than almost everybody else.
Was that the academe, too?
It's probably the academe, yeah. My father's a professor, and he's probably like, yeah, well, you know, those people are not too bright. But, yeah, it was very much the case.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
You were saying your parents shielded you from the jackasses of the world, and you were had done the same with your children. Is it because you weren't attacked as often, or why was that? Because I look at my household, and I've been straight up with every single person and say, hey, this person is a jerk, this person is a jerk, this person is great, this person is awesome, so on and so forth, because of my personal experience, and I want them to see what it feels like on both sides of that spectrum.
I don't know, Ann. It's a good question. But I think you also, we've talked about this before, and you also had to tell your kids about risks that they would face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I faced fewer risks because I'm privileged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you tell your kids that, Jeff?
Not enough. Not enough.
Because we talk about that a lot.
Yeah, well, we did later, but not enough early on, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I also
mm-hmm.
think back, I mean, it, you know, there's, I'm the...
And I'm not judging you, by the way. Just
no, I know.
Make
I
sure
know.
That's clear.
Oh,
yeah.
And you're going to laugh at what I'm about to say. I'm actually shy, but I'm the outgoing one in my family. The rest of everybody's else in my family, I don't bring into anything because they don't like a lot of social stuff. And I look back on my mother, who was scared to death of people, as I now realize. And I didn't understand social anxiety in my parents or in my family now or in people around me. And I think that's an interesting problem, too, is that there's reasons to be anxious about people. There's a-holes out there.
All of this is insight you gain with age, I think, Jeff, yes?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, I've noticed that for myself. One hopes that you become... Wise is a strong word, but you become a little smarter as you get
But should we prepare our kids better for that?
I don't... You know, when you have kids, you're young... And dumb.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we all do the best we can.
Not Ann.
Yeah.
But it's not good enough ever.
Oh, boy, I screwed up a lot.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Everybody, if you're honest as a parent, probably has those moments where you go, boy, I could have done that a little better. That was a bad scene.
Sometimes I feel a little weirdo, bless her heart.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a little break.
I've had boys, you know, for umpteen years, and now I have a little girl to help raise. Boy, who bless her heart.
Different techniques are required.
Clearly.
You can't call her a hardhead, for one thing.
I don't know about little weirdo. I'm like, oh.
Little weirdo? That's okay. And said with love. That's what matters.
I did hear the love.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
It's not the words. It's what's behind the words. Our show today brought to you by HPE, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, GreenLake, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. Yesterday's infrastructure is not going to help you meet the demands of tomorrow's innovation. And now, more than ever, you have to quickly adapt to change. The consumption-oriented model of the public cloud has revolutionized how organizations think about infrastructure. Organizations are now demanding the speed and agility of a public cloud experience, but many workloads remain on-prem for a lot of reasons. Complicated legacy applications, data sovereignty, compliance, or just, you know, the seriousness of migrating sensitive data. And, of course, IT is caught right in the middle of all this, trying to satisfy the demand, the growth of their organization, struggling to manage disparate data, and of course, it's always the case, you got to do it all at budget. HPE GreenLake and CDW can help. They can provide a seamless, scalable cloud experience across your entire organization that you can easily manage from anywhere, no matter where your data and applications live, on-prem, public, and private clouds, or all three. Trust HPE and CDW to automate your processes so that you can focus on the next big thing. CDW can help you get the most out of your unique and complex data needs by assessing your organization's needs and designing and implementing a tailored HPE GreenLake solution to modernize your business and meet your digital transformation goals. Now, once implemented, CDW also provides ongoing management, freeing up your staff to focus on the fun stuff, on innovation. Let CDW do the hard work. Seamless cloud experience, of course, across all your organization's apps and data, thanks to the as-a-service model that meets you at the edge. You get scalability, instant increase in capacity when you need it, so you've got the flexibility to match your growth and meet demand. And, of course, streamlined management of everything, all your data and applications with a single platform, providing simplified operations, accessibility from everywhere, and again, giving you back time to focus on innovation. CDW not only helps assess an organization's needs and build a unique HPE GreenLake solution, they also remain an active partner and provide support throughout the management process. They're there when you need them. CDW experts also bring decades of experience designing, orchestrating, and managing strategic cloud solutions that help you unleash the full potential of your investments, giving you back time to, yes, innovate and dream bigger. For a seamless cloud experience, trust HPE and IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it. Get it? Learn more at cdw.com/HPE. That's cdw.com/HPE. We thank CDW and HPE for their support of This Week in Google. We have, you know what, this has been such a great philosophical conversation. We haven't really covered
the perfect kind of twig discussion.
Any of the news, yeah. Meta, weirdly, has hit the brakes, apparently, according to Wired, on hardware. Portal, AR glasses, other hardware.
Consumer hardware, especially. Portal's going to stay for business.
I wonder, you know, consumers. I mean, Microsoft's done the same thing with HoloLens. It's become an enterprise product, perhaps.
Google Glass. Microsoft's HoloLens, though, the guy who led it left.
Yep.
And they're not sure. And
they split up the divisions into two different divisions. You're right. The Army's not happy.
So we don't know how HoloLens is going to go.
If there's a commonality, it's that maybe the metaverse isn't all that, right?
Man, I can't tell. You know, like, I feel like forever I've always been on the front edge of being excited about different tech things. So like cloud computing, IoT, and I'd be like telling people why this is a big deal and explaining it. I don't feel that way about the metaverse, but I still feel like everybody's pushing the metaverse on us. And I truly don't get it. So I don't know if I'm behind or if there's just not a compelling anything. I don't know.
Meta NFTs. I think I'll try this theory out. And sorry, it's another Gutenberg moment, but it took time for technology to become boring, and then what people did with it became interesting. And I think there's this hunger by Silicon Valley, by the technologists, no, we got to make it more interesting again. We got to make it more interesting. And I don't think that's what's going to be interesting. I think what's going to be interesting is Cervantes making the modern novel and Montaigne the essay and the guy in Strasbourg the newspaper. And what do people invent with this stuff?
But remember, these are corporations driven by shareholders who want to see growth. And so from their point of view, they're not thinking, oh, let's see how technology is merged into the culture.
I'm talking past them.
Yeah.
Way past them.
Oh, I agree. Because all their only job is what's the next big thing and how can we make sure we're there? And they, of course, are faced with the innovator's dilemma. It's historically hard for incumbents to get the next big thing. Apple, 52% of its revenue comes from the iPhone. How do you find something better than that? You know, how do you meet the...
I don't care about those companies.
Oh, no, I'm saying that, but that's why the tech is doing what it's doing, is they're not thinking about some broader cultural... They're not saying, where's our Montaigne?
But Jack's trying to go back and recapture something that was before in terms of the ability.
Well, and that ain't going to happen either, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
and then with, as far as you go,
it's not the end.
As far as you go, Stacey, I agree with you. This is always, this is the tech reporter's dilemma, is what I'm seeing really all that, or is it just more BS? When Charlie Rose, when Jeff Bezos 10 years ago opens the door and says, see, Amazon's going to be doing drones, and Charlie Rose goes, wow, that's amazing. At the time, we all mocked him. We all said, oh, Charlie, you fell for it. And yet, this week, Amazon is starting drone deliveries in a bunch more cities. It took them a longer time than they thought it would.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah, that's
a story. Are we still skeptical about it, though? Or are we now saying, well, maybe they were right. Maybe Charlie wasn't so
wrong. Yeah, drone delivery has a place. But I felt like we could see that.
I don't know. A lot of us made fun of Charlie Rose, like, you know, Jeff pulled the wool over your eyes, and it may be actually that he did, because that was a long time ago.
I just don't like how it seems like it was sold as something mainstreamish.
Yeah, like soon, like within, it's just like Elon saying, you know, next year, you
want a robot? Yeah.
But like what Miss Stacey said is yeah, there is a place for drone delivery, but I didn't like how. It seems like if I go to order a pair of sneakers or new tripod that I ordered today, I should be able to get this in the same day if I hit deliver by drone. That's not possible everywhere. That's only in certain areas, and it's not for everything. You know, a drone can't carry everything you order.
Well, it's in Lockford, California. I don't even know where
that is.
Lockford. The company announced, Amazon announced it's going to launch its inaugural drone delivery service in the town of Lockford, California, later this year, after it receives the green light from the FAA, obviously. Can't
of course,
do it.
There is nothing around it.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Well, that's. Where is are it? You looking at it? I don't know where. I've never even heard of it.
A little north of Stockton.
Oh, okay. Lockford residents will be the first to receive prime delivery packages delivered to their backyards via drone. Not everything, obviously.
It can't be everything.
You're not going to get that inflatable pool, but thousands of items will be eligible for drone delivery. There will be rate restrictions because most drones can't do it.
Again,
more than a, few,
a drone can only carry so
much. A few pounds. Amazon says it's developing technology to improve obstacle avoidance, both on the ground and the air. It's working on enable its drones to operate BVLOS, BVLOS, beyond the visual line of sight. Well, I would hope so. Otherwise, the pilot's you can only deliver it. Well,
why don't you
put
just
it over there?
It off?
Yeah. So maybe, you know what? Maybe it's still BS, right?
3,500 people.
Yeah.
78%.
Yeah, it's a small scale.
Yeah, that's the perfect pilot.
I also think
city.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pilot, and I also think drone delivery is not going to be. Obviously for everything, right? I think part of the mistake technology or people when we talk about technology, we often think we're like, oh, this will solve all of our problems, when in reality it'll solve a subset of our problems and the trade-offs we've got to understand.
So it was nine.
It's sold that way though. A lot of the stuff today is just
I get
the
it.
Answer
yeah.
to your biggest problem. You know, how many I know you're in the IoT space, but how many things in IoT was set to just make our lives so much better by putting it on our mobile device and controlling it there instead of flipping the switch that's on the wall right when you walk
This in. Is from an article in The Verge, 2013, 9 years ago. Amazon's Jeff Bezos showed off his company's latest creation to Charlie Rose on 60 Minutes, drones that can deliver packages 9 years ago, up to 5 pounds in your house in less than half an hour, part of a program called Amazon Prime Air. A drone sits at the end of a conveyor belt waiting to pick up a package. 9 years later, they still haven't delivered that package. Bezos says 86% of Amazon's packages are under 5 pounds and carry them up to 10 miles from the fulfillment center as soon as Amazon can work out the regulations and figure out how to prevent your packages from being dropped on your head from above. 9 years ago. This is
it's called R&D, right?
Yeah. This is why our job is hard, by the way, because we see all this stuff.
I think it's
why
our job is awesome.
It's why it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You get to see this, you get to say, "Oh, what are the implications of this?" Because you know, the companies aren't thinking of like that sort of thing. Like, what are the implications to wildlife?
No, that's
when
our job.
A bunch of drones running around.
Yeah, that's our job.
So, I don't know.
And also, a big part, I think, of my job anyway is telling people whether this is real or not to waste your time as best I can. It's hard to do.
NFTs.
NFTs and Bitcoin. By the way, now add to the Warren Buffett says all this crypto's crap. Now add Bill Gates' name to the list of people who are saying, don't. Now, you might say these guys are all old.
Are they
dudes.
Saying it because right now when it's down 70%?
Well, it's easy now, isn't
months?
It? But I've been saying it for a while.
Yeah, you have.
And Bill Gates says crypto and NFTs are a sham. He says strong words. Yeah. These digital assets are 100% based on the greater fool theory, he told the TechCrunch conference yesterday.
He's been watching Twig.
He added he's not long or short on crypto, and he mocked Bored Ape NFTs, joking that expensive digital images of monkeys will, improve the world immensely. He prefers old-fashioned investing because he's an old-fashioned kind of guy. I'm used to asset classes like a farm where they have output or a company where they make products.
And Mr. Gates, check out antpruitt.com/prints.
Get some prints. Get some NFTs. What do you think about this, though, Ant? Jay-Z has created a Bitcoin Academy.
How about for timing, huh?
For kids in the Marcy Houses public projects. I think this is probably misguided. This is the projects in Brooklyn where Jay-Z grew up. Free classes to residents. Also, devices and data plans. Children 5 to 17 will be eligible for enrollment in Crypto Kids Camp, featuring classes on crypto.
If he's just providing knowledge about it, I have no problem with him providing knowledge about it, considering how many people still have no idea what Bitcoin is. Some people think you can pick up a Bitcoin.
No. The instructors will, quote, teach you about Bitcoin, how it works, why you should care, and how to build your own financial future.
Yeah, I don't know about that part.
That's a little...
Yeah, I don't know about that part. The other parts I'm fine with.
I don't think Jay-Z is a bad guy, and I think he's probably trying to do the right thing. But, and he
bad
says...
timing.
Yeah, well, the program's mission statement reads, the vision for Bitcoin is that it doesn't have barriers, but lack of access to financial education is a barrier. It's still hard to use for everyday necessities. Plus, people need devices and data plans. This program aims to provide education, empower the community with knowledge, and get rid of some of the barriers so that residents can learn more about Bitcoin specifically and finance in general. I mean, I think in principle, maybe this is okay, especially if they learn about Bitcoin, stay the hell away from
the volatility of it. I'm totally fine with that. Just educating those youth in that area that normally wouldn't have access to that information. I'm totally fine with that.
Well, and one of the promises...
What if it's a loss leader for financial education? Like, these kids are excited about crypto.
Right.
So, I mean, it could be...
One of the things that sucks people into Bitcoin is this notion of we're underserved communities. You know, housing project in Brooklyn, cities in Africa, big banks don't want to be there. We're redlined out of existence. So maybe there is an alternative financial system that we can participate in. Mm-hmm. And I think that I understand the desire to do that. I just hope they don't lose their shirts.
Right. That's where I am. Just teach the financial responsibility part of this as well.
Yeah. Vice says, for poor people excluded from the traditional financial system, throwing them to a new one full of bubbles, fraud, exploitation, and volatility won't teach them much. It'll just be old wine and new skins.
It is like if he is teaching that information.
Yeah. It depends what they say. Yeah.
All right. Same as when you know, the class, hey, kids, let's make believe we're buying 10 stocks. My kid went through that.
Yeah.
Right? And learn the dangers of the stock market, but that's also how the world works. Bitcoin isn't how the world works yet.
Yeah. Qualcomm has won a battle against the EU. We hear a lot about the EU and regulations of big tech. The EU fined Qualcomm nearly $1 billion, actually €1 billion, so more than $1 billion.
Well, barely these days.
Yeah. This was 4 years ago. In 2018, the EC said Qualcomm paid billions of dollars to Apple from 2011 to 2016 to get them to use only its chips in iPhones and iPads to block out rivals like Intel. Now, the reason this might be important is this is a court, the General Court, Europe's second highest, annulled the finding and faulted Margarita Vestager, the EU competition enforcer, over the handling of the case.
Wow.
A number of procedural irregularities affected Qualcomm's rights of defense and invalidate the commission's analysis of the conduct. So, yeah, no kidding. This is a big blow to Margarita Vestager. Yeah. Big blow.
I wonder what the procedure abnormalities were.
Yeah.
Probably very boring.
This story from Reuters is not more specific.
I love procedural issues. Yeah. Well,
can you get on that and give us a report?
You know, I was the person in Model UN who understood all the rules of, like, parliamentary procedure and figured out how to use that to my advantage.
According to Robert's Rules of Orders, you are out of order, sir. Out of order!
EU... Are you having a heart attack? Are you okay?
Order!
Oh, oh yeah. This is the second dead air that has caught me. I'm like, what is happening?
You're talking about this wonderful guy, John Bercow, who is no longer the speaker.
No longer the speaker.
But he was so great.
John, Mr. Angus Brendan McNeil, calm yourself. You may be a cheeky chappy, but you're also an exceptionally noisy one.
Wow. This is Parliament.
Oh, he was just starting his order.
Yeah.
Oh, you want order?
No,
yeah.
No, order. I must order the Honourable Gentleman to withdraw immediately from the House for the remainder of this day's sitting. This is intolerable behaviour. As far as the public... No, it's not funny. That sticker on the subject of Brexit happens to be affixed to or in the windscreen of my wife's car. Yes. And I'm sure the Honourable Gentleman wouldn't suggest for one moment...
Why don't we have somebody like this?
That a wife,
maybe Stacey, would you volunteer to go to Washington, D.C. and say, order!
Yes, I volunteer. Ant, you want to back me up?
We'll You'd both be go. So I got you good. Back. You'd be so that. Good. Wow.
Her truth module is up high, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to set it to 80 or 90%. Well, actually, you probably...
actually, in probably parliamentary
can, as long as I can call someone a cheeky chappy,
cheeky
I am
chappy.
Down.
You may be a cheeky chappy. But they're all cheeky. There's a damn place here.
You mentioned Douglas Rushkoff. I just got a... You probably got a too, Jeff, since you know the guy. I got an early copy of his new book, which I cannot wait to read, Survival of the Richest.
Yep.
Escape Fantasies of the Tech Billionaires. This is what the billionaires are planning. Not just Mars, but island bunkers, the metaverse, and decommissioned nuclear missile silos.
And Douglas and I got along wonderfully teaching class together, even though we do see the world somewhat differently.
Yeah, I look forward to reading this. I just got it, and I can't wait to read it.
You said that's an early release.
I think we'll finally get them on the show.
Yeah, it's not out yet, but you can pre-order it. Yeah, we will. You know what? Well, let me read it. If it's good, we will.
Okay.
But I am sure it's good. He's on Team Human, after all. Yes, Douglas Rushkoff. Is he a media critic? Is he a professor? What is his?
Yeah, he's a professor. He doesn't have a doctorate like me. I don't have a doctorate either. But he's.
A I was going to say. Wait a minute. I should have been calling you Dr. Jarvis.
When
always.
That happened? No.
I was just at an event at the University of Virginia, and they had the bios, and so everybody is doctor. And I had to make very clear to say, not
a
me.
Doctor. Well, I'm my father, who has a PhD. Got it at very young age. I think he was like 23 or 24 from Columbia in paleontology.
Wow. Do you know what the topic of his dissertation was?
Yes, ancient marine ecosystems. But he refused. He said, do not call me doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. He didn't.
Oh.
There's a reverse snobbery going on. You don't call me doctor until he needed restaurant reservations. Then it was always Dr. Laporte. Every time. It works. We got to take a little break.
Otherwise, Professor Laporte?
Professor does not, even back then, you know, remember Adlai Stevenson.
It doesn't get you dinner
doesn't
reservations.
Doesn't get you dinner reservations. No. Doctor might, yeah. Let us, because it is soon to be time. Oh, wait a minute, though. One TikTok.
I just want it known that y'all full circle on TikTok.
Y'all.
Aunt.
This is a Chipotle ad for queso.
This is the ultimate twig. It's Chipotle, it's who we used to like.
It's got Chipotle.
And queso and TikTok.
Here we go.
Hot salsa to queso blanco.
Add hot salsa to queso blanco. Shake it up. Enjoy.
And queso blanco is free every Monday in June with an entree purchase.
What?
You use code QUESO22 in the Chipotle app or online.
But doesn't Chipotle queso, isn't that disgusting?
They actually got better.
Oh, okay.
It was awful. It was awful.
Okay.
It was gritty. It was really
It was
bad.
Gritty.
Exactly. Gritty, yes. It was like
weird.
Chalk. It was melted chalk.
Ish.
Okay, but that is not a hack. Putting salsa in your queso is just a thing.
No, it's just a thing you do.
It's like a thing one does.
Plus, we remain bitter that Chipotle never bought an ad on the show. We gave them tons of publicity in there.
You know, early on...
Well, most of it was about how bad their queso was, yeah.
Early on, when we were doing the Gizwiz with Dick DiBartolo, we could never get a sponsor, so I started doing fake ads for Tostino's pizza rolls for the longest time. And then I found out they're not Tostino's, they're Totino's.
Totino's.
So I basically blew it. And now a word from Steakums. No, let's do the Google changelog. Did you hear that?
The Google changelog.
Get Q in the middle of him laughing.
I love it.
What?
He's so
What is it, Jason? What is it? What? We're not seeing the TriCaster. Oh. Now, does that mean I have to start the show over? Thank God.
It's just extra value for the Twitch people.
It's just the stream. It's not the recording. Okay. Let's do that again. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for the Google, well, you know. Doesn't he say change log in there?
That's the wrong one.
And now, it's time for the Google change log.
The Google change log.
Oh,
there we go.
Woo-hoo. So... if you are a newspaper or a blogger, you probably take corrections pretty seriously. YouTube has never had a way for YouTubers to correct their videos. So there's a new feature just added to YouTube called corrections. You can easily add more obvious corrections. I see YouTube videos all the time.
Audio or what are you doing? How do you? What? I don't.
They're info cards that you add. To the video.
This is wrong. What you're seeing and hearing.
Yeah,
right
what
now.
I'm saying is completely wrong. Actually, it's weird because you have a pop up that says "few corrections." How many YouTubers are going to use this? Really?
Oh, like three.
Yeah. I was
I would
wrong.
Use it.
Well, I see that a lot. I'll watch videos and I see it a lot where. You know, the guy says something. I do it. Everybody does it. If you're doing it and you're doing fast, there's something wrong. You know, it's 64 gigs of RAM and it's only 32. And they'll put a little caption on it. This is, it was only 32. I made it.
That's what most people do.
Yeah, that's normal.
Actually, I'm going to use that because I've got to take my videos that I did 2 years ago for the incoming class. And there's some things I want to change, so I can just use it to update. It doesn't have to be a correction, right? It could also be an update.
That's a good question if it says correction. I think it says corrections. Let's see. Here's the full instructions. Wow, it's complicated. Okay, I read them all.
YouTube, you got to watch the video.
You got to
understand
the video.
How to do it.
Google Chrome's on-device machine learning. You know they love saying that. Is sentient? No. Sorry.
My phone is alive. Oh, no. Should I kill it?
It says, or they say, it blocks noisy notification prompts. So they've always had built-in, not always, but for a long time, they have a built-in phishing detection that tells you if the site you're going to, you've seen it, it pops up and say, this is a scam, right? Now, in Chrome 102, It's going to use machine learning that runs entirely within the browser, no Google data going back to Google, that will help identify websites that make unsolicited permission requests for notifications and silences them. Now, the first thing I do in Chrome and Firefox and Safari and every browser is I say block requests for notifications. I don't like it when websites do notifications.
Oh, you can block that universally?
Yes.
Oh.
It's such a nice feature.
Awesome.
Well, I think I do in Firefox, and I'm pretty sure I remember doing it in Chrome. It's the first thing I
do. You can do it in Chrome.
Yeah.
I do it.
Yeah. But it's buried because it's in the content section. Okay. So it's not, you have to really look for it.
But if you Google it, you should totally do it. It's easy to do.
Oh, cool.
Oh, because it drives me crazy. It's the first thing I do when I set up a browser is I block notifications from all sites, and I block the request to save passwords because I use a password manager. And I don't want that. So there's just little annoyances. Anyway, Google says that you're not even going to have to change that setting anymore because we'll now just know. To further improve the browsing experience, we've also evolved how people interact with web notifications. So in effect, I guess it's possible to sneakily say, turn on notifications without your permission or something. So they're going to block that? To help people browse the web with minimal interruption, Chrome predicts when permission prompts are unlikely to be granted. Oh, I get it.
Oh, and they see the script.
You don't want notifications, and they silence the prompts.
Okay.
I guess. Anyway.
Do you have to pay extra?
No.
To get your prompts?
Does the site have to? Yeah, how does it know it's undesirable? Is it Yelp?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, we know you don't want those Yelp notifications.
Well, in fact, I don't. Yeah.
Google Maps now shows toll prices on Android and iOS, so you'll know ahead of time that you've got to pay some tolls. That's nice. Do you pay? You pay a lot of tolls, don't you, Jeff, in New Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the thing.
We pay a lot of tolls, too.
Really?
The bridges.
It's the bridges. We have the bridges we pay, yeah.
Yeah, just
the turnpike.
One for me. No, two for me. There's Richmond Bridge, too.
Yeah, Richmond and Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah, and Bay Bridge has a toll, too. Shortcuts, replacing files and folders stored in multiple locations on Google Drive. I thought you always had shortcuts.
I didn't understand this. That's why I put it in there. I thought you'd explain it to me.
I don't know what this is about. Leo figured out for me.
How easy for you to find and organize files while keeping the original version.
Well, shortcuts, it's going to do it automatically. It's just going to do it to you on a given date.
See, Windows does this, which I don't like. Windows looks like it's a folder for my documents, but it's a saved search. It's not what you think it is. So the replacement process will start in 2022. You'll get a notification in Google Drive a few weeks before your replacement starts. Wait a minute, what? Your process will replace all but one location of files and folders that are currently in... Oh, this is to save them storage. If you have the same file in multiple locations, they're just going to go suck them all into one.
How much can that be? It's Google.
Well, but there's billions of people.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Across all of us.
The replacement decision will be based on original file and folder ownership. We'll also consider access and activity on other folders. That's so they know which one is the original. At the time of replacement, so it's automatic. So they're going to replace duplicate documents in your Google Drive with shortcuts.
What if I put a document in another place so I can change it?
If it's changed, they won't do that.
Document. No, I'm saying something different. I get ready to tomorrow.
But you haven't changed it yet.
I'm going to change it, right. And then I start changing document two, thinking I'm changing only document two, but now I'm changing document one.
Mm, I don't know.
Ruh-roh.
We'll have to see.
Ruh-roh, yeah. Right. Ruh-roh.
Google lists, this is from ChromeUnboxed.com, Google lists their recommended third-party apps for Google Workspace. Okay, great.
Well, I also put this in here because
they
say they do it every year.
Okay,
but I don't know. I've never seen.
It's the apps. You know, when you say I want an app,
but they only recommend 12 of them. I didn't know that.
Yes,
there was a
those
hierarchy.
Are the special apps.
The Mail Meteor
calendar invites are going to be changed a little bit to be more modern and more clear. That's a good thing because these calendar invites are terrible. Terrible.
The problem I have, I don't know if this happens to you, is that people want to have a Zoom meeting. you put the name in, and it says make it a Google Meet meeting, and then make it a Zoom meeting, and then they don't erase the make it a Google Meet meeting, and nobody knows where to meet.
So that's because Google automatically populates it because exactly. they're antitrust.
Yeah.
Yes.
So here's the
because they're antitrust.
Here's the old invite. Blah blah blah. You recognize this?
And then, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And then the new one is gonna be like this.
Ooh, do that again. Go back.
It's not looking much better.
Yeah, it's not.
No, it's not looking much different.
Not helpful.
Well, it is better. Oh, it's much better.
Figuring out where your meeting is nicer.
Yeah. See, a nice big button says "Join with Google Meet."
I hope I can still do Zoom through the...
Well, that's one thing. We've had problems in the past. I think it's still happening, where if you make a Zoom meeting with Google, it also has a Meet ID. And then there's always...
Yeah, you have to, that's what I'm saying.
The creator there's always people in
that's what Jeff was complaining about.
No, that's what I just said. You have to kill... You have to explicitly kill...
That happens to you, too. Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, they make it automatically, and you can kill it, but if you don't kill it... Both are there, and Meet is above Zoom, and everybody's confused.
Today is the last day you can use Google Talk. What? It's still operational, but tomorrow it's over for Google Talk, also known as GChat. This is what you were talking about, Stacey?
Yes.
You were supposed to be using Hangouts, and then they killed Hangouts.
Meet.
So you were supposed to be using Meet. Or chat. I think it's chat.
All of them over my life, yes. And so I didn't know GTalk was still available.
I am amazed. Hangouts is kind of still hanging around. But it's Google Chat.
Did they kill Hangouts? Because mine's all chat now. I don't have Hangouts as an option.
They rebranded it. Yeah.
I have chat.
I'm getting this irritating thing. Sorry, Stacey, go ahead.
No.
He's very excited about it.
I know. I was like, oh my.
When I reboot the machine, it comes on and says, we're eliminating this and that and that and that. So get rid of this and start this. And then I click on it and it goes to a 404 every damn time now.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it does.
All right, one more thing and then it's waffle time. Well, no, it's a pick time in just a bit. But I want to talk about the Floppotron 3.0. Oh, and that's the Google changelog. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
you're out of order.
It's time for the Floppotron 3.0. This crazy guy, put together a musical instrument made out of hundreds of old floppy disks, the drives. Because, as you probably know, they make a little whining sound, which he can, the stepper motor, control to get a specific frequency. Problem is the floppies tend to sound kind of bassy, so he's also using various other things like flatbed scanners for the higher tones. Would you like to hear the Floppotron 3.0 in action? Here it is on YouTube.
A little longer than a few minutes later. One eternity.
That was 2016. This is 2022. The new Floppotron. The size of this sucker.
Jesus. Wow. Does this guy ever get dates?
You want to come over and listen to some music?
This is pretty great. I got it. Wow.
This is better than TikTok. People watch it.
That's scanners, 512 floppy disk drives. Four flatbed scanners.
Unbelievable.
Doing the low end. I mean, the high end. Those are hard drive steppers. 16 of those. Doing the kind of percussion. He's even got custom interfaces.
Yeah, say, I was about to say. Wow,
Floppotron 3.0 PSU module. Power consumption, 300 watts peak. No, 300 watts average, 1.2 kilowatts peak. There is, you saw that emergency stop button when the wife comes in. Wow.
Wait, he went from, does this guy get dates, to being married all in one.
I don't know.
Song.
I'm making it up. I'm joking. This is really mind-boggling.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Let me set him up with Mr. Burt. See what they can put together.
I love people that do stuff like this.
What does he do for a living?
I don't know. Let me see.
We're so easy to amuse.
With great power comes a great energy bill, he says.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, boy.
It's a long article. Silent.org.pl. He's Polish. The next step of makes videos of the new setup, some minor software bugs to fix, some software to add, like end stops for scanners. And he wants to do some new instruments, a dot matrix printer, maybe some automated lighting. This is Stacy on IoT. This is you, Stacy. This is where you're headed if you continue down this,
yeah,
this road.
Yeah, in her dotage.
This dark road that I'm on.
Wow. The Flopotron 3.0, silent.org.pl. All right, final ad, then we're picks, and then it's waffle time. You know, one of the things I did love about Termination Shock, which we're going to talk about tomorrow on Stacy's Book Club, is there is a mention of the Stroopwafel in the book, right? They have a lovely meal,
yeah.
And at the end, the dessert, he says, of course, a Stroopwafel. So,
Netherlands.
It involves the Queen of the Netherlands.
Exactly. Saskia loves her Stroopwafels. This Week in Google is brought to you quite literally by Cashflight. Now, we don't have 512 hard drives making music, but we do have Cashfly, our content delivery network. We've been using them for more than a decade. They really came to our rescue 10 years ago, more than that now, I think 12 years ago, when we were struggling with all the downloads we had to give. And then we went to video and, oh, it's just a nightmare. Cashfly's the best. 50 points of presence all over the world, which means your content is delivered closer to your customers, outperforms local CDNs. In fact, it was so much faster than our 30% faster than other CDNs, 10 times faster than our old HTTP method. It was a revolution. And I bet you never say to yourself, gosh, it's so slow downloading this TWIP podcast. It's not, thanks to Cashfly. Now Cashfly does low latency, ultra low latency video streaming. Deliver your video with Cashfly, the best throughput and global reach, making your content infinitely scalable. You can go live in hours, not days. And get this, sub 1 second latency. Less than a second. Ditch your unreliable WebRTC solution for their WebSocket live video workflow, scalable to millions of users. You should also check out Cashfly's storage optimization system. We've been kind of using a unannounced version of this for a long time. We put our content on Cashfly's servers, which takes load off the origin servers, reduces your S3 bills, and increases your cache hit ratio to 100%. Ask about SOS, Cashfly's storage optimization system. And with Cashfly's elite managed packages, you get fully managed CDN solutions, VIP treatment, 24/7 support, response times in less than an hour. And I could tell you, the Cashfly team is fantastic. If there's ever a problem, they solve it. And by the way, there's never been a problem. They're incredible. So what do you get? Ultra-low latency video streaming, more than a million concurrent users, lightning-fast gaming, zero lag, zero glitches, zero outages, mobile content optimization that offers automatic and simple image optimization so your site loads faster on any device. And with those multiple CDNs, you're getting short routes, minimum performance glitches, and 100% availability in the last 12 months, 100% availability. A 98% cache hit ratio as well. Best of all, Cashfly has a 24/7, 365 priority support, so you know they'll always be there for you when you need them. We love Cashfly. We really are so grateful for all that they've done for us. They've put us on the air and kept us on the air. Learn more at cashfly.com, C-A-C-H-E-F-L-Y.com.
cashfly.com. Thank you, Cashfly. Thank you, thank you, thank you. From the bottom of my heart. Cashfly.com. Stacy, you probably have 100 things you want to talk about since you've been gone so much lately. What do you got for us? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. A stroop waffle. She's got a stroop waffle for us.
No, I have. Okay, so Father's Day is this weekend, if that's important to you.
Oh, crap. Yeah.
So
I have a father. I better get going. Yeah.
Good to know.
Good to know.
I bought this, and I just got. So my husband actually got this for me for Mother's Day. And I'm just going to tell y'all, I am really spoiled. Just know that. So this is my new Kindle 8. The reason I got it is because it's waterproof and I wanted to read books in my hot tub.
Oh, isn't that great? No, that's a great thing.
The walled garden of privilege.
Flex on them. Flex on them.
I know, y'all. I'm a simple woman who needs some very fancy things. But I didn't, my old Kindle was perfectly fine. And so I didn't, my husband got it for me because it actually does make a nice gift. But I was like, I can't take this. This Kindle is fine. I've got to wait till this one breaks I leave it on an airplane because I do that.
What kind, is this a Paperwhite or an Oasis? What kind
it of? It is a Paperwhite. It's the 8th generation Paperwhite.
Okay.
So while I was, I actually ended up, my daughter's Kindle broke while she was quarantining. So I gave her my Kindle. And then so I was able to use this one.
What happened to the book reader I gave you? Did that didn't...
It's over there.
I couldn't read it in the hot tub, Leo.
Oh, no, that's a good point.
But so I finally opened it.
Or she
really
did read it in the hot tub, but it's a goner.
Yeah, it didn't work. But so now I tested it because one of the things I was able to do in Puerto Rico, the hotel had a pool and it had like little lounge chairs in the pool. And so I could read in the lounge chair in the pool.
Oh.
And it worked. So this is truly waterproof.
I love the Paperwhites. The screen is so crisp. It's really good.
It's really nice. Good. Yeah. I don't know if here, let's show you my.
Is that the signature edition? With that lock screen ads or do you get the lock screen ads?
Oh, I get the lock screen. I love the lock screen.
I know. It doesn't bother me at all. Yeah. Yeah.
My husband and I are like romantic brothers or whatever. You know, it's like something crazy.
It's usually books. Yeah. Oh, look how nice that looks. Very crisp.
Ta-da. So. Yeah.
Oh, is that Ellie Mistal's book?
Yes, it is.
Who is
you recognized
amazing.
It how? How did you recognize that?
Give me a book sentence? In two words. First sentence. Yeah.
I named that book in two words.
Our constitution is not good.
Wow. Amazing.
It's excellent. It's excellent. And I highly, highly, highly recommend the audiobook version because it's Ellie in full performance.
What's the name of it?
Stacey, you have it right in front of you.
Hold on. But I don't have the title in front of you. Allow me to retort. A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution.
I think it's already in my my wish list. I will add it. No, it's
I
not.
I think you'll like it too, Ant.
Yeah, because you've recommended that before. Yeah.
It's direct.
Yeah, remember you recommended it. It's blunt and direct. In my wish list.
I just got the John von Neumann book that you recommended before, and I'm really enjoying it so far. Very interesting.
Did I recommend Cloud Cuckoo Land to you guys? It's a little touch of sci-fi.
Yes, you did.
Didn't like it at all.
Well, you didn't.
Oh, boy.
It was really distressing to me that I was just like, and maybe it's because I was like quarantining and like too much was going, but I just could not get into it. And I wanted to so bad. I'll try.
It took me a while to get into it. Once I did, I was glad.
I was like, dear God.
What was Jeff thinking?
Everybody was.
Everybody's talking about
it. I went through, I got 5 books in a row I couldn't stand. It's awful.
It's awful when that happens. It really is. Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to add Cloud Cuckoo Land, and maybe I can hate it along with you. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, again, I probably should.
Oh, this is Anthony Doerr.
Yeah,
it's already. This is also my wish list already. Yeah.
I guess I watched too many dadgum TV reruns because it amazes me how often y'all are able to read these books.
We force ourselves. We compel ourselves.
I do have a new graphic novel if anyone's into those.
Monstrous. Looks beautiful.
That's beautiful art.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
Check out the art. Here, let me find a good art
Nice.
Page. there's lots of good. I'm trying.
Do you
to find
let your daughter read those or no?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's part
well,
of childhood.
On,
oh, that's
beautiful.
Ooh, wow. That looks like nice Elden Ring. There. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really
what,
nice.
What is Elden Ring?
It's a video
I
game.
I see it going by.
It's a video
oh, thank
game.
You.
Yeah. It's a very, very difficult
blue scale, not the grayscale.
Oh, that's pretty.
So, yeah.
Is that, which volume is that? There's six of them.
This is volume 1.
Volume 1. All right. Jeff Jarvis, give me
a
number.
Unless you did this on Windows Weekly, I wonder whether we should start with a moment of silence.
Oh, it's
for
sad.
Internet Explorer.
So sad.
Oh, yeah.
It was
going to
take over the world!
Jesus Christ.
When he wakes up, he really wakes up. Yes, 27 years. It's gone forever. Today's the last day of Internet Explorer. But we talked about it. The funniest article in the Wall Street Journal, you're going to like this, Jeff, because it's clearly they had quotes with people who use Internet Explorer. They never used Internet Explorer. It's clearly these are people who merely wanted to get in the Wall Street Journal, I think. I'm still trying to process it, said Sam Maumalanga, a 31-year-old Polynesian dance instructor in Euless, Texas. It sounds like a parody, doesn't it? Who is attached to Internet Explorer. I've used it for so long. It's the first thing I get on my laptop. Well, sorry to tell you, Sam, it comes with every version of Windows. You don't have to get it. He's making this up.
Maybe he's thinking of Chrome.
Yes, he's thinking of Chrome. That's exactly right.
Or Edge.
A 22-year-old TikToker from Peterborough, Ontario, Matt Linkard, says, it's sad to see it go. For me, Internet Explorer provided a portal to a world of endless information and computer games.
Oh, my Lord.
And porn. But he's not going to say that. Joni Casey, this is really hard to believe. A 67-year-old retiree in Ellicott City, Maryland, says, the Internet Explorer is one of the three that pop up on my cell phone. No, it's not. It's not, Joni. She's thinking of Chrome. I guarantee you. Unbelievable. The journal, how does this work, Jeff? How do you get somebody to, I need it, you put a, is there someone?
These days, you probably go on Twitter.
Go on Twitter. Yeah. Say, I need somebody who remembers Internet Explorer.
Well, my day, I'd have to call around.
I think in the Wall Street Journal, you just walk around the newsroom.
Well, where's the dadgum editor? Cell phone? Really?
Come on. One of the three that pops up in your cell phone? What kind of cell phone does she have?
You flip it open.
But my favorite thing, if I can find it here, I bookmarked it. This is a tribute to Internet Explorer, a website called lagplorer.tms.sx. This will bring back some memories. Internet Explorer has encountered a problem and needs to close. We're sorry for the inconvenience.
Oh, man, that makes my skin crawl to this day. Oh, man.
Explain this.
So if you're listening
people,
and you're not
please.
Seeing, but this happened every... It's funny, when I show these people, everybody recognizes it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Internet Explorer would crash, and then the pop-up that would say something's gone wrong would paint itself on the screen, and you could paint with it because... You just drag it around and there'd be a million of them. A million of them. Lagplorer.tms.sx if you want to.
That's hilarious.
That's gold, sir. That is gold.
Sometimes it's the simplest things in life. Maybe that's what she means when she says she has three browsers that pop up on her screen. I don't know.
She said three, not 300.
3,000. Mr. Ant, what's your... I know what your thing is.
Yeah. Yesterday, I believe it was yesterday at the time of recording this show, Adobe announced some updates for Lightroom, and that's Lightroom Classic, Lightroom on your mobile, as well as the new cloud.
No,
Lightroom.
I got bad news for you. This is not Lightroom Classic. Video editing is only in the new Lightroom.
Well, hold on. You didn't let me finish.
I'm so bummed.
Okay.
Yeah, let me finish.
Okay.
They have a lot of different updates out there. Yeah. One, which includes video editing for Lightroom Classic. And you've been able to import your videos into Lightroom Classic for I don't know how many years now. Never really found a use for it. But if you want to, you can. And do a little bit of trimming and some retouching of your videos, just like you would if you were on your iPhone and you shot something real quick and, you know, it gives you the little quote-unquote edit function. It's going to be very similar to that. But they also added some other AI stuff in there, such as the masking features. You can now do a mask selection, copy that selection, and paste those same parameters into a similar shot without having to, you know, recreate your mask and recreate all of your settings and stuff. Just more AI trying to speed up some things.
I want you to verify this for me because I read the Engadget story which said the new feature only applies to Lightroom, not Lightroom Classic. And I only use Lightroom Classic. I won't go near Lightroom CC. It's horrible.
I don't have a problem with Lightroom CC, so, but I'm a Lightroom Classic person.
Can you see if this works? Because according to Engadget, it does not apply to Lightroom. I mean, the Lightroom Classic.
I will double check because I haven't launched Lightroom today.
They say
update last
Lightroom
night.
Classic has supported limited video editing and trimming in library mode, but doesn't support advanced editing in the develop module. But I'm not going to use CC. So the other things do appear in Lightroom Classic. So
The other stuff. Yes, yeah. I will. I'll launch it sometime tonight. But it updated.
I guess I'm not going to do much video editing in Lightroom. I guess
you better not.
Well, here's the use case for it. I take a lot of pictures, but like when I go to visit my mom in a couple of weeks, I won't be here, by the way, 2 weeks from now because Jeff's going to host the show because
you're stuck
I'm going to be in
me.
Rhode Island to see my mom. But when I shoot pictures, I also every once in a while I'll record like 3 or 4 seconds of video, just a little bit, right? Because then I like to do a slideshow with some motion and sound in it. But it would be nice to just process it all in Lightroom Classic and trim and stuff like that, maybe color correct. So that I don't have to export it out to an editor and then import it back in and stuff like that. That's all. I'd just be nice to have some simple features.
And I put editing in, sorry for scratching my eye, edit in air quotes because it's not like you're going to create a whole sequence.
But I could trim it up and color correct it, which would be most important. Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
That's the Adobe updates. And lastly, I follow Benro tripods. I actually use their tripods here and there. And they have a closeout on one of their tripod models, so and it includes a video head. So while
this
supplies
is a video
last,
head.
Check
I'm
it
getting
out
this for Henry
for like $150 bucks. What is that model? It's the S6 Pro video head, and it's on the aluminum tripod legs. And for $150 bucks, you can't beat that.
That's nice.
It's an older model, but hey, it's Benro, so it's going to be a good quality. It's not a cheap tripod. Which we talked about on Hands-On Photography.
I don't usually do pics, but this thing has been driving me crazy. It's I love it. It's so much fun, and it's also kind of not so much fun. It's a new plugin. It's an install over here. Oh, here it is. Called Toucan. Do you know about this? Toucan. So it's language learning. I'm going to turn it on. And the way it works, I have it set for Spanish, but they have a variety of languages, Spanish, French, German, Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Italian, Arabic, Hindi, Portuguese, and Hebrew. I'm going to use Spanish. When you turn it on, you just leave it running. It's a Firefox plugin. I think there's a Chrome plugin as well. You just leave it running, and then it changes words everywhere on the web at random intervals into Spanish. So here's a tweet from AOC, perhaps abandoning youth employment, school fondos. What? That's Spanish for funding, and then you have a little audio.
If you didn't have stupid dark mode on, you could actually see the box and understand it's there.
I'll do it on, I don't know.
We're going to mute Mr. Jarvis.
I know. He's terrible. I know. He's an evil person. So here's another article. This is on Engadget in light mode. So it's still about un mes away.
Un mes.
So I'm going to learn from afar. The device appears to be una mezcla, a blend.
Una mezcla.
It's Castilian Spanish, by the way. Sin embargo.
Sin embargo.
Isn't that great? So without really much effort, you're slowly getting Spanish vocabulary
into your...
Welcome, Boca de Dragon.
Boca de Dragon. Yes.
I love that.
Boca de Dragon.
Boca de Dragon, a.k.a. Snapdragon. Isn't that great? That's hysterical.
What are a few tricks up its manga?
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that neat? It's called Sleeve. Toucan. There's a free, complete free version, which does pretty much everything. It does everything I just showed you. I actually ended up paying because I thought, oh, this is great. I'll use this everywhere. And then you can always turn it off. You just hit Control E, and then it turns off. So if you don't want any Spanish mixed into your Engadget, you can do that. But isn't that cool? Isn't that clever? Yeah. Toucan. And I think the website is gettoucan.com. Let me just check real quick. Okay. Nope, that's not it. What is it?
I hear a yawn, Miss Stacy.
Is that a little hint?
I think I'm still I don't have long COVID, but I am definitely
I hope
not
you don't have
back
long
to
COVID,
normal.
By the way.
How many kids in the trip had COVID? Were there other kids there?
Literally one. Literally one.
Wow. How did she get it? Do you think? Do you know?
She caught it from the, what's the person who, the tour leader.
Oh, man.
And ironically, she wore a mask religiously. There's a picture that was captioned smiles after the airport, mask down so you can see their faces. And my child's the only one with their mask on.
Wow. Toucan is Join Toucan, TOUCAN, JoinToucan.com, not Get Toucan, Join Toucan. Well, but she's feeling better now, right? She came home.
Yeah, she's better. We made it home finally. Whew, travel is crazy.
Yeah.
So,
I love Puerto Rico. I want to get sick in Puerto Rico. Actually, I want my daughter to get sick in Puerto Rico. So, actually, she's in Portugal right now. So,
I know that. That might also work.
It could happen. Crossing my fingers. Stacey Higginbotham. No, I'm not.
Wow.
I don't want her to get sick.
Hopefully she doesn't watch the show.
Yeah, some Father's Day for you.
Yeah. Oh, I get to go to Portugal. Stacey Higginbotham is at stacyonIoT.com. Sign up for a newsletter. It's free and it's great. Check out the events. And, of course, the IoT podcast she does with Kevin Toefel. Did you do it from San Juan?
Yes, man, and that show was snake bit. I had someone hammering in the room upstairs.
Well, that's okay. These
it's
things
a journey.
Happen. It's a good
we
show.
We apologized.
It's worth it. Thank you, Stacy. I appreciate your being back. You'll be here next week, right?
I will. I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, though, in July. Just setting your expectations.
Oh, me too. Well, I'm going to be gone, for a week, because we're doing the Twit Cruise in the middle of July. Jeff Jarvis is, of course, the Leonard Town Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. BuzzMachine.com is his blog. He also writes at Medium. He's at Jeff Jarvis on Twitter and a very active tweeter. So you really should. I mean, if you want to follow somebody who's got a lot to say.
No matter what's going on, I'm tweeting. On the show, off the show, I'm tweeting.
No, and that's good.
Jeff has free opinions.
You're the kind of guy I want to follow on Twitter, to be honest. And you're also full of good information about other people to follow.
Vim and vigor.
You might want to get a new banner image, though.
Actually, I might. That's a little dated. I didn't even know that was my banner.
That's kind of
old. Whoever looks at their own banner.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And Mr. Ant Pruitt, hands-on photography, twit.tv/hop. What's coming up on Hop?
Oh, dang it. Oh, yeah. We're
Something
going back
good.
To our video.
just You're too young to forget.
A blank. We're going back to our video editing module. We're just going to continue to ramp up how you can create captivating videos other than just recording them with your phone and sticking them out there. So we're going to talk a little bit more polished this week.
And I will see you in the club tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. You too,
yes,
Stacy. It's the book
Great.
Club. I can't wait. Termination Shock by Neal Stephens is the book this month. But if you go to the book club, you can choose the book for next time. We already know what Stacy's favorite is. So make sure you show up at the book club. Otherwise, if you can't make it, of course, it goes on the Twit Plus feed after the fact. I think I'll be the only one who loved that book.
We'll see what
Burke said.
John.
Is it Burke or John?
John
Sorry.
Yeah.
John liked it.
Yeah.
So. Well, we'll see what the members say.
It'll be interesting.
They read it.
So, yeah.
Please join us, Stacy's Book Club, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Pacific. Thanks for joining us right here, everybody. We do Twit every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. You can join us and watch us live if you want at live.twit.tv or listen. There's an audio stream as well. Chat with us at irc.twit.tv. If you're a Club Twit member, there's a Discord chat as well ongoing. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show available at twit.tv/twig. There's also a YouTube channel. You can catch it there. Or subscribe in your favorite podcast player, and that way you'll get it automatically the minute it is available. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll see you next time.
We need new art that has ant in it for our front art.
None of it has art.
None of it has, it's okay.
So just to warn you, the new artwork does have four hands in it.
Oh, no, not our podcast art.
Oh.
I'm talking about that. There's no.
Got to fix that. The Jerry's got to come in here. Next time you're in studio, Ant, let's... Ant, because of Roger, COVID, has been doing it from the home. But
oh, yeah. No, I just was like, wait a second.
Let's get new pictures. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right on the
It took me like 2 years to get on that, Ant, so
yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
What, but you were starting to warn us.
Hey, we're going into year two now, so we're right on time.
So, yeah.
Do you know who Saul
Bass...
It's
time to bring it up.
Do you know who Saul Bass is? Does that ring a bell? He was a very famous graphic designer, did many posters, including The Man with the Golden Arm. You remember...
Right, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what our album art looks like. You'll see what I mean.
Okay.
In a couple of weeks. Hey, thank you, everybody.
By the way, John.
We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.
Oh, that is the end now? We didn't end before? We ended again?
No, I never said goodbye.
That's because I interrupted.
I got stopped by the Higginbot.
I've been relegated to a shelf. I'm so hurt.
Yes.
Oh, the Jeff photo. Nobody puts Jeff in the corner.
Nobody.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.